You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to Earth Station One, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Earth Station One. That's right, folks. We are here to talk all about MASH, the TV show that lasted three times longer than the actual war itself that it was based on. Pretty cool series that, you know, a lot of us grew up with, either first run or in syndication. Even today, you could still find the series on numerous cable networks. And, you know, MASH is just one of those iconic shows where you keep on watching and watching and always see something different, or you have your favorite episode. And we're going to talk all about it. And speaking of our favorite episode that keeps on going and going, let's welcome my co-host for this week, Mr. Mike Gordon.
Howdy.
You're just like the Energizer Bunny most of the time, my friend.
not quite. I wind down, believe me. As soon as the recording stops, poof, my batteries are done. But I could use some energizers, that's for sure. But I'm really excited about this episode, and this particularly this topic. MASH is something that I think it's a show that a lot of us take for granted because it was on for so long, and it's just a staple. It's just one of those things. It's like, oh yeah, it's always been there. But it's an incredible series. It broke a lot of ground. And it still holds up in a lot of ways today. So this is something that I should mention that was on the docket of our schedule for a long time. We had to postpone it a couple times because of just other topics that came up. But we always had it in 2018 as being on this date. And unfortunately, it serves to be as a tribute episode because we lost one of the members of MASH this just recently in the last couple of days.
Mm-hmm, exactly. It was really sad to hear about the passing of David Ogden Steers, who played Major Winchester on MASH.
Yes, Charles Winchester III.
Exactly. And, you know, he was originally meant as a replacement for Frank Burns on the series, but he proved to be so much more than Frank ever was. But that just scratched the surface. He's done so many other roles. One of the ones that popped into my head that he's been in was, did you ever watch The Dead Zone when it used to be on USA?
I did. I did watch that for a few seasons. I did.
And he was amazing on that show.
He was. I know that this is not, you know, something that a lot of people want to acknowledge in this this sort of sensitive era that we're in, but he lent his talents to a lot of great Woody Allen movies, I think, during the 90s, that era. There was some really, really good stuff. Shadows and Fog was one of them. There's Mighty Aphrodite is another one. So he's a great, great actor, and I've seen him in a number of other TV series, Star Trek, The Next Generation. He's in a pretty, pretty great episode there. But I mean, if you pull up his IMDb, man, you will see that, he worked a lot, and rightly so. I mean, he was, whether he played a bad guy, good guy, comedy, serious drama, he could do it all.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. He was even the Martian Manhunter.
He was. Yes. Yes. I think that's something that we'd all like to forget, but you know, history proves boom. You know, if you look it up, he played live action, the first Martian Manhunter role. And that's pretty outstanding actually.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And then he was also John Cusack's father in what was, I think, Better Off Dead, if I remember.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. That's I had forgotten about that one.
Mm-hmm.
I know that he's in, I believe he plays the mayor in Dark Hollywood. Is that right?
No, I don't think so.
No? Do I not have that right?
I don't think so.
Hold on. Yeah, I thought he's in. Yeah, he's the mayor in Dark Hollywood. I just looked it up. He's Mayor Nick Nicholson in Dark Hollywood.
You were right. He was also in Pocahontas and Beauty and the Beast.
Oh, Beauty and the Beast, you know, for those, he's one of the seminal voices of that amazing, amazing Disney film.
Mm-hmm. Also, one of my favorite animated was Hoodwinked. He was also in.
He did a lot of voice work, yeah. Actually. I mean, not only is he, and especially for Disney, because he was also in Pocahontas, Hunchback of Notre Dame. He in a lot of Atlantis, The Lost Empire. He did. He had a great voice that you see him a lot of times. He played the Penguin in Batman Mystery of the Batwoman. He's in Lilo and Stitch doing a voice. He's just, amazing talent. And, it wasn't our intention, obviously, to do an episode about him. But because it just aligns with this episode of MASH, I think I speak for all of us when I say we are dedicating this episode to him and his family, mm-hmm. and fans, because, he was part of MASH, that cast that I loved and that I connected with. I know that, when MASH, we're going to talk about it a little bit later, but it went through a lot of different actors and they had some different shakeups with the cast, but the cast that he's in, with him, BJ and Hawkeye in the swamp, that's what I think of when I think of MASH. Those are the three guys that I think of. And, we dedicate this episode to him.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And, good on him for everything that he did, and he will be missed. Definitely think so. We definitely want to hear from you guys at home. Tell us your favorite memories from MASH or from some other roles that he definitely was involved with. Please write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com or call us at 404-963-9057. All right, we were going to talk about the Oscars, but this is going to be a very full episode. So, Mike, real quick, did you watch the Academy Awards last night?
I watched almost every second of it. I thought it was one of the best entertaining Oscar programs that I've seen in a long time. I really enjoyed it. I thought Jimmy Kimmel was on point. I thought there was a lot of excitement. And maybe it's because I'd seen about half of the movies. So I was kind of rooting for some people. So that always makes it a bit more engaging. But I thought overall the pacing of the show was really well done. There didn't seem to be any moments where it lagged like it has in the past. Even a couple of the stunts that Jimmy did went by so quickly that by the next commercial break, they were over with. And I there was a lot of history made last night too. So it was kind of an important episode or important ceremony to watch, to see some people get recognized that, had been overlooked in the past.
Exactly. And kudos to the actors who won. I think it was a great, achievement for a lot of these. You actually finally had a best actor whose work has been spanning decades, and every time he appears on the screen, this man is just amazing to see.
Isn't it amazing to believe that he hasn't won an Oscar before?
No, Gary Oldman, who has done everything from Sid Vicious to, basically he just played Winston Churchill. In almost unrecognizable as Winston Churchill, but he changes his look almost in every movie he does.
And not just his look, his manner, his voice, he metamorphosizes into these characters.
Oh, extremely so. But, he was up against like Daniel Day-Lewis, who does the same thing.
Yes, exactly.
And so it's just amazing to see. And, Frances McDormand, who won, it was awesome to see.
Yep, she is a force to be recognized. But, we have to give a particular shout out. And as a geek, it's always nice to see genre films recognized. And for Guillermo del Toro to win Best Director and The Shape of Water, which is such, Mike and I have already raved about this movie, about what a beautiful movie it is. To see it get awarded Best Picture is gratifying on so many levels, because yeah, there were other movies that were probably worthy. But the fact that Shape of Water got the award is just, it feels special, I think.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And yeah, I think, you know, Alice and Jenny deserved it, but it was great also to see Sam Rockwell win.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Sam is just so frippin' awesome anyway. And, you know, he's just one of my favorite actors out there right now. And just to see him win a Best Supporting Actor was great. And Effin' Missouri was just a great movie anyway.
I still haven't seen that one. So that's one I haven't seen. I haven't seen Get Out. So I'm curious about it.
I've yet to see Lady Bird yet, too.
Yeah, eventually I'll get to see all these, because there was a lot of them that looked interesting. But I didn't think there was a bad one in the bunch, you know? It wasn't like I was anti any of these movies. There was a lot of good movies that came out last year, and some of them were hard to pick. You know, I would have been hard to pick between, you know, Shape of Water and The Post and Coco and Dunkirk.
Congratulations to Coco for winning the Best Animated Movie, and also for winning Best Music.
Best Song.
Yeah.
Best Song. That was pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Remember Me was such a wonderful song. And, but there are some amazing songs even this year. So thumbs up to everyone who was nominated. It's just an honor to be nominated. And, you know, someday ESO.
We want to be nominated.
The network itself will be nominated. Earth Station One definitely will be up there sometime. And Mike and I will both be, you know, trying to get that jet ski.
No, I'm going to take my time, man. I'm not gonna win the jet ski, because I'm gonna soak it in. They're gonna have to play me off,
like they did many people last night.
Exactly.
So, no, with our luck, we'll just be in the movie theater watching the other movie, and then have the celebrities come in. That'll be the closest we'll get to it. to dream the impossible dream, as we like to say. But yeah, kudos everybody, and you know, Jimmy does a great job. I enjoyed it. He got a little political. He got a little, you know, funny, a little, you know, some things crashed. But overall, I think he did a great job. And kudos to have Bonnie and Clyde come out once again.
Keep running that play till you get it right.
Exactly. And, you know, thank goodness they didn't have a mess up like they did last year. So.
Yeah, well, it was a different kind of history made last year.
Mm-hmm. So. Exactly. So definitely worth, you know, watching the Oscars. And to me, in some ways, I enjoy that better than the Super Bowl. So, but that's just me, you know. At least we don't have people cheat on that one. So it's okay. Cheers. Ha, 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 ha. But anyway, so with that being said, we definitely would love to hear from you guys at home. And, you know, what did you guys think? Did you like it? Did you not? Were you disappointed with the winners? Were you thinking, oh my God, it's just so long? Because it went 40 minutes over this year. And so
it always goes till midnight. I don't know why that people are surprised by this and talk about how long it is. It always goes past midnight.
Sometimes it goes longer, sometimes shorter.
Yeah, so suck it up. It's a celebration of movies. If you're not that interested, then okay. But I mean, you know, it is what it is. So.
It's like Earth Station One. You know, we just go as long as we feel like.
Exactly. Yes, I know. Coming from us, that doesn't nobody's surprised by that.
Exactly. So, you know, the longest podcast ever, Earth Station One. Yeah, that's what we'll get up there for.
Said no one ever.
Exactly. So let's take a quick break. And we'll be back with the Geek Seat. Remember me, though I have to say
goodbye. Remember me. Hi, this is Ashley Pauls with this week's Box Office Buzz. I'm excited that we're finally heading into spring movie season, so we've got a lot of more fun geek movies to talk about. There's a big one I've been looking forward to this week called A Wrinkle in Time, which is, of course, based on the classic novel. It's about a girl named Meg whose father has mysteriously disappeared. And of course, there's more going on here than meets the eye. Meg meets three mysterious beings named Mrs. Witch, Mrs. What's It and Mrs. Who will end up helping her find her father by traveling via wrinkles in time and space. This one's got a really great cast, including Oprah Winfrey, Reese Witherspoon, and Chris Pine, and many others. And this one just looks like a really fun science fiction adventure movie for families. So looks like it'd be a great one to check out in theaters this weekend. By contrast, we have another sort of science fiction movie called The Hurricane Heist, which looks like it's going to be just about as ridiculous as it sounds. This one's about a team of criminals who steal $600 million from a U.S. mint facility during a hurricane. Now, to me, this looks like one of those late-night sci-fi channel movies, more so than a movie that probably should be released in theaters. But here we are. I watched the trailer for this one and actually couldn't believe it's being released as a movie. So I would recommend that A Wrinkle in Time is probably going to be more worth your time and money in theaters this weekend, but who knows? I guess we'll have to wait and see what the critics say. And on DVD this week, we've got a really big one. That's right, it's time for Thor Ragnarok. This is another fun entry in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And I've actually been thinking about this one quite a bit since it came out in theaters last year, and this is one of the Marvel movies that I enjoyed. It was fun. It was funny. But in the end, I think it was almost a little too funny. Some of the big plot twists, and there are some really big plot twists, didn't have as much weight or consequence as I felt they really could have. So I'm curious to see kind of how well this one ages in terms of the overall MCU. But I think it's definitely great that Marvel is letting some of these directors kind of give their own unique spin and take on these stories. So it was definitely fun. I know a lot of people who really loved it. I'll be adding it to my DVD collection. So if you haven't seen it yet, be sure to watch it and get caught up for Marvel's Infinity War, which is coming up very soon. And that's it for movies this week. If you're looking for more entertainment content, be sure to check out my blog, boxofficebuzzab.wordpress.com.
We don't go in there. You don't want to go in there. There's a reason that chamber has no door.
What did she tell you? That it must have been a dream?
Rookie mistake, Doc!
Turn it up to 11 to Flask. Let's see what she's got. And smoke me a kipper. I'll be back for breakfast.
No, Doc, it's a rational transaction. One life for billions.
If you think that's impressive, wait until I get going. The answer's 1 plus 2 plus 1 plus 1.
You must be truly desperate to come to me for help.
Dr. Geek's Laboratory of Applied Geekdom, Season 3, coming soon.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Geek Seat segment. We got a great guest this week. Let's welcome to the show for the first time, Taffeta Darling.
Hi, welcome to the show.
Yeah, well, welcome to the station. We appreciate it. For those people who may not be familiar with you, tell us a little bit about you and yourself.
I'm from Dallas, Texas area. I've been kind of a geek force out here for a little bit over a decade. I work with a charitable organization. It's Heroic Inner Kids. It's a bunch of adults doing good in cosplay. I'm their media advisor. I'm also an advisor for the Ladies Who Geek chapter out here, and it's a bunch of ladies who get together for happy hour, for brunches, for lunches, for like book clubs and such. And on top of that, I have been doing my own live streaming YouTube channel as a hobby for a while called Fangirls, and it's myself and my co-host Christina, and we live stream every week, every Wednesday either like comic reviews, movie reviews. Sometimes we'll just make drinks and just drink and live stream. So it just kind of depends. And I'm an avid Kurt Russell fan.
Yes. Yes, you are. I have noticed that. So, and you know what? I don't blame you. I first saw him actually in that Elvis movie where he kicked him in the shin. And I've been a fan of his ever since.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Something happened on the world of the world on the way to the World's Fair. He wasn't even credited that. He was just little baby Kurt Russell just getting his start out in Disney.
But he got to kick Elvis in the shin.
He did, and then he got to play Elvis because of John Carpenter like 20 years later. So it all circles around.
Yeah,
and like his name was the last thing that Walt Disney ever wrote before he died. So there's like a lot of theories and like speculation in that as well. So he's definitely a Disney legacy. So can't go wrong.
Well, in addition to everything else you're doing, and you are so massively busy, you are actually... you're actually getting involved as a writer. Is this your first time writing a comic series?
A comic series, yeah. Like, I did, I've been writing reviews and stuff like that, which is totally different than actually, like, coming up with character conceptions and, like, themes and getting these guys out. I'm teaming up with Stefano Cardicelli. He's actually overseas in Italy, and he's been doing, like, artwork for Heavy Metal Magazine and a lot of companies over there and a lot of freelance work. Him and I have been trying to get stuff together for almost 4 years, and it just anyone we kind of went to, like, they were looking just to kind of screw us over, it seemed. But Kickstarters weren't really as popular or as trusted 4 or 5 years ago as kind of they are now.
Absolutely.
So we decided to go ahead and kind of self-fund it, and like I said, we've been wanting to team up. And for myself, like, I kind of live and breathe 80s and action and cheesiness. So I kind of proposed the idea of me and my cat being like mystery, noir detectives in space. And it kind of just went from there. So my cat's like 16 years old and he's like my best friend forever. And so in my own like selfish way, I just kind of wanted to have a book drawn about me and my cat. So they were willing to do it.
It looks awesome. For those people out there, the title is The Mysterious Space Adventures of Daring Darling, Private Dick, right?
Yeah.
And
I wanted it to be long and ridiculous with that title. Like,
Mission accomplished.
Well, I'm a big fan of Buckaroo Banzai, and I was like, you know what? I got to go with it. I have to make it this long, ridiculous title. So that was just kind of a nod to already like that movie. And I feel like that's kind of what a lot of people can expect, is that, I'm solving like mysteries in space with my cat, but like, I mean, you're going to see like 80s references and 90s references and like, Easter eggs and nods everywhere. So, yeah.
Yeah, it definitely has that 80s feel. Like, the title alone, like you said, Buckaroo Banzai, there was those other ones, Metal Storm, The Destruction of Jared Sin, or what was the other one that was what was that one? The one with Molly Ringwald. I can't remember the name of that one, but that had an absurdly long name too. So I get that. I get that. And from the very cover, the color scheme that you're looking like, that's definitely 80s inspired.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's definitely popping. It's a lot of blues and pinks, and it's a lot of, it reminds me of stuff that I would see growing up, like, in kind of like the area I'm at now in Dallas, like a lot of like graffiti art, like a lot of street art. And I really like Stefano's feel for that. And then we have the colorist, Tommaso DeVito. He's the one that's actually, popping in these colors and doing great work there and like, bringing it all together. And then the guy who actually is tasked to kind of like help me focus all my thoughts and ideas is Andre Amanta. And again, all these guys are overseas, so a lot of this is just done through like instant messaging and emails and mass messages and stuff to kind of get it going. But yeah, they are willing to let me bring out all these ideas, and they're putting them to paper. And I love the idea that this was something that Andre kind of did himself, with making Earth just like kind of a museum, so to speak, to where like it's just kind of like this giant orb of relics, which is kind of cool.
Now, of course, this is for, you know, the Kickstarter is for first issue or issue one. Is it self-contained, or are we looking at a whole series here?
There's going to be four issues, but each one will be self-contained. There's going to be about 60 pages per book. So it's essentially kind of a graphic novel, like a trade paper situation. But it's 60 pages of just crazy art in words. But each mystery, each issue will be self-contained. I mean, I'm sure there'll be like some sort of continuity with like myself and Houdini and like the, you know, throwbacks or recollections to like other places we've been to. But like each mystery will be self-contained because it's just easier that way to wrap it up like a half hour episode of Scooby-Doo.
I would imagine at some point we're going to meet a Kurt Russell inspired character. Maybe.
You know, I was already written into the Big Trouble in Little China comic with Jack Burton.
Okay.
I was written into issue 16 of the Big Trouble in Little China comic. I mean, he's done like Old Man Jack, and there's Big Trouble in Mother Russia, and there's the England book that he has. But this was just the actual Big Trouble in Little China comic that Boom Studios put out in a Fred Van Lente and Joe Eisma did my show like way back when, and we were just kind of joking around. I was like, well, if you ever need a cameo, feel free. And then like they didn't tell me about it until the day it came out, and I was like, shut your mouth, that's ridiculous. So I'm actually canon in Big Trouble in Little China, so I'm okay with just having that and not having to have him mix in my universe because I'm already in his.
Gotcha. That's very cool. I did not know that. That is very cool. It was to have to seek out that issue.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Well, cool. Well, it looks like, I mean, the Kickstarter is off to a great start so far. I was a little thrown off because it's in euros. So
yeah.
I had to kind of adjust my Kickstarter to, I guess, because it's being produced from the guys in Italy, right?
Yeah. And my Kickstarter automatically, like my iPad automatically changed it to euros. So I didn't really think about that because it just did it automatically. I was like, oh, okay, you know, it's like 18 bucks US dollars or like, you know, 15 or, you know, 12 euros. But it was automatically converting it for me. So I didn't really think about that. So sorry if you guys were, anyone was thrown off by that. But yes, it is in Europe, but you do have the ability to see what it translates to.
I do think we have a few listeners in Europe, so they'll feel right at home. So that'll be awesome.
Perfect. Yeah. We were pretty happy to get it funded, the first goal within the first day. So that means like right now there's like, you know, 40 people who are going to get copies and like the rewards, but we're not too far away from what our second goal is. And that's actually going to be released tomorrow because we're trying to do updates. I know those guys are going to do updates tomorrow with the next stretch goals, but I think once we get 3,000 euros, that's when we can actually go to like a mass printing rather than just kind of doing the one-offs for like the 40 right now. So that's kind of our goal, is to hit that number so we can get a good amount to where we can get these out to people who backed it, but then also, you know, have some for conventions and for him to have some over there, and then, you know, myself to have some here for events and such as well.
You've been, you know, on the fan side of things and covering it really well for so long. Is it weird being on the other side, or does it feel very comfortable?
So far, it feels really comfortable because it's essentially just everything that's in my head. It's interesting, though, having someone else write for me, because I can take these ideas to them, but essentially, like, they're the ones that are putting it to the paper and in the word bubbles. So it's weird that way, having someone like actually take my words and like make it understandable for, I guess, the masses. But so far it's not weird because there's really not a product or anything I can that's tangible that I can hold or, you know, see. So
gotcha. When you first get that first issue, boom.
Yeah. Once I actually have something in my hand and I can see it, then I'll be really happy. And for the most part, again, it's really just because I wanted a story about me and my cat in space. So to see that happen, he's 16 years old. He's been with me for like ever. And so I keep telling him just to give me four more years, or really two until I'm 40, you know, and then I would be happy, or not happy, but I would be willing to let him go. So Either way, he's going to be immortalized either by book or frozen in carbonite until they figure out a way to bring him back in like 50 years.
It's a very cool thing to do too, to immortalize your loved ones in something like that. So that's very cool. And so it's very cool that it's got this sort of added bonus to the project. It's not just just having, you know, having fun, but it does look like a lot of fun, especially the artwork. So it looks great.
Yeah. Thank you. I'll definitely pass it along. I really can't take credit for that either. I'm like, whenever someone says, "Oh, your cat's cute," I'm like, "Thank you. Those are my genes." You know, I feel, I don't really know how to respond. I'm like, "Okay, thanks," yeah. You know, but I don't want to seem ungrateful, but it's like, I really had no part in, you know, how cute he is. I wish I did. But it's the same with, like, you know, the art and these, the colorists. I, you know, thank you, but it's like, I just watch in awe. I'm like, hey, that's kind of my resemblance. Again, it's not like, you know, dead on me. It's obviously like a caricature in its own comic way, but there's definitely a lot of references and hints there. So I'm thankful to see that come alive.
As a independent creator myself, I know that there's nothing that thrills me more than getting seeing pages come back, and it's always exciting. So, but one thing that might be as exciting but a little terrifying is the Geek Seat, and it is rating for you. So without further ado, we'll strap you in, and Mike, if you are ready.
Yeah.
Are you kids ready for the Geek Seat?
Mm-hmm.
All right, Taffeta. Your first question in the Geek Seat, what was your favorite geek out moment?
Well, since I haven't actually met Kurt Russell yet, I would say my favorite was probably meeting Christopher McDonald. He plays Shooter McGavin in the Billy Madison movies, or excuse me, the Happy Madison movie. And I was at a convention in San Antonio, and I was in the press room and kind of taking a quick break and was just kind of relaxing. And he walks in, he's like, "Hey, where's all the food?" He's like, "Do you know?" And I was like, "What, if I look fat? I don't think I know where all the food is." You know, it was just kind of very off guard. He's like, "No, I'm just looking for the food." And I was like, "Okay, I don't know." And I was like, "By the way, you know, I really liked you in Happy Gilmore when I did the guns." I was like, you know, the little Shooter McGavin guns. He's like, "Oh, thanks." And then without, like, skipping a beat, he turned around and, like, did the guns right back to me. And I was just like, "Oh, my God, I just got Shooter McGavin guns at me." And then he, like, ran over to me. He's like, "Let's do a selfie." And I was like, "No shit. Yes, that's awesome." So really meeting him was just fantastic. I've had the privilege of hosting the Weird Science panel in the Nightmare Before Christmas. And then this year, in October, was the Monster Squad reunion panel. So I've had a lot of really intimate moments with a lot of these actors and actresses. Meeting Kelly LeBrock, it was very intimidating because this was someone who I wanted to be growing up. And so when I met her backstage, I guess she could tell I was nervous, and she put her hand on my heart. She's like, "It's okay, you know, calm down." I was like, "You don't understand who you are. I literally have Kelly LeBrock's hand on my heart telling me to calm down. It ain't going to slow down, sweetheart. It's just literally going to keep beating." So her on the different side of things, and then also that shared moment with Christopher that no one else got to experience.
That's pretty awesome, though. What was your most disappointing geek out moment?
I would say probably my very first interaction with meeting a celebrity. I grew up, like, with Saved by the Bell in the 90s. I was a tween. I loved Saved by the Bell. And, of course, I had you know, a crush on Mark Paul Gosselaar. So I think it was 1990. I went to the local auto show, and he was there appearing. And I think I waited in line for an hour and a half, which is great because it prepared me for all these conventions in my adult life that I would be waiting for. And I waited for a while, and I remember getting up to his little desk or whatever, and he didn't have, like, the blonde hair. It was, like, dark brown, and, like, he didn't look anything like he did on TV. And they're like, "You want a photo?" And I was like, "No, I'm just taking the autograph." It just kind of walked away, and it was my first moment of not everything on TV is real. Very young, but I mean, he was totally nice, but I just remember being super excited to see this, you know, guy you know, from Zack Attack, and it was not him at all. He was older and didn't have the bleached hair, and it was a little bit longer. So snap into reality real quick.
Reality has a way of doing that to you sometimes. What geeks you out the most?
There's a lot of things. I think right now, for pretty much most of my life, it's probably been Batman. I like the books, the movies, besides Nipples Shoemaker, and I like the comics, I like the animated series, I like Bruce Wayne, I like his wards, I like the direction they've been going on right now. There's a couple different stories that are going on, the White Knight that I'm really enjoying, and then coming up, he's going to be teaming up with Booster Gold, so pretty much Batman, Batman forever, always Batman.
Can't go wrong with the bat. What turns your geek off?
Gatekeepers, people who tend to be, well, you know, I like to call them the technically or the well actually people. I think, you know, people who just don't let people enjoy themselves. I mean, obviously, like, if you're being, like, a jerk and you're, like, spewing hate, then definitely, you know, get on that person or whatever. But I think there's always kind of a weird stigma with the geek community that we grew up not being the in crowd or whatever, and now in this weird bizarro adult life, like, you know, we kind of roll. And so I think there's a hesitation for a lot of people to kind of want to reverse roles and be their own weird gatekeepers and have their own, like, you know, cliques and excluding people. And so that kind of pisses me off a lot when people try to be gatekeepers, because it's like, you know, you should want more people involved in your fandoms, because the more people there are, the more stories you'll get. So, yeah, I'd say gatekeepers.
Oh, yeah. That's one of our number one answers, actually, on the show. What fictional character would you like to meet the most?
Oh, for the moment, maybe Brianna Tarr. Like, I'm absolutely, I've actually met Gwendolyn Christie, but, like, Brianna, the character herself, is a very powerful, loyal, respectable woman in a time of, I guess, the medieval-esque and dragons and lore when they weren't really looked upon as much. And before, you know, Arya and Sansa, you know, became these, like, ladies, they were still kind of kids. And, you know, Brienne's been having to, like, kind of do her own thing for a while and take charge, improve herself. She's constantly having to prove herself, and she doesn't fail. So she's one of my favorite female heroines. It's not, like, in the comic realm, but I think very much so she could hold her own with the Justice League or Batman.
Oh, definitely. I would not want to cross her on a dark night.
Yeah.
What fictional character would you like to meet the least?
That's a good one. I would say oh, that's tough. There's like four or five that are coming to mind right now. Maybe like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. Like, growing up, I always kind of like would watch that movie, and I love Ghostbusters as well. But, like, I remember being younger and being like, I don't ever want to meet him. Like, not only am I going to get, like, you know, squished, or if he winds up dying, I'm going to be covered in, like, marshmallow goo. And I hate sticky things. So that's really where that comes from. I hate anything sticky. Like, I'll touch a door and be like, why is this sticky? Or if there's, like, kids around, I'm like, why am I sticking to kids? So
get away from me, kid. You're sticky.
Exactly. Stay Puft, possibly even, like, Scarecrow. Scarecrow is one of those villains that anything that kind of is going to mess with my mind, maybe not so much. Any of the kids from the Brat Pack, like, all those, Breakfast Club kids. I don't really care about any of them.
No.
I'd be okay not to meet them.
Fair enough. What is your favorite geek word, phrase, quote, or pose?
I have a magnet that I keep in my car, and it's Billy Crystal from The Princess Bride, Miracle Max, and it just says, have fun storming the castle. And that's probably one of my favorite things. Just because, like, it's almost like a daily mantra. It's like, oh, crap, here's another day of life, you know, take it on. And I'm absolutely in love with The Princess Bride. So that is probably one of the main things I would say in any quote from The Simpsons, but pretty much have fun storming the castle is my favorite.
When I say bye to my friends when they leave my house, have fun storming the castle.
Exactly.
That's always good. What is your ideal geek occupation?
Well, I mean, if I had any talent, I would really, really like to create like 3D models and do more props. Like, I'm pretty low budget and like, you know, more novice than anything when it comes to crafting and cosplaying. But I think working in the fields of special effects or set design would be really fun for any of the geeks. Like, I actually work for an auction house, and my job has been for the past year is researching and writing and cataloging vintage movie posters, retro movie posters, and memorabilia. And so that's really fun. And ideally right now, it's a fun job for me. There's not like a big career in it. So I know in this company, I'll eventually have to go to corporate, but it's, I mean, for the most part, I've kind of got it. But then if I had like any pick, I'd probably want to be like a convention runner, but not like a big CEO, just somebody that's kind of in the middle where there'd be less responsibility for me, but I could still go to conventions and meet people and make a lot of money and do nothing.
That's the dream.
The dream
that's
is
exactly to... that's my ideal geek occupation. Go to conventions, hang out with artists, get paid, and do nothing.
You know, that's not a bad way to live.
It's not. I aspire to it all the time.
What geek occupation would you not like to do, though?
I guess probably the people who have to put out the press releases on characters that are coming out that no one's going to like or care about, or making the toys that no one's really going to want to buy for that character. Because you're going to have to put all this hard work into conceptualizing it and designing it and getting it approved. But this character, whatever it could be, is just going to be terrible. No one's going to like it anyway. So it's just kind of a moot point to where you just put all this energy into it. And then it's going to be like a villain or a B-movie character or a side character that no one's really going to want. And more than likely, people would make fun of.
I could see that. It's a little thankless there, right there, because you got it.
I mean, just for one, like Jar Jar Binks, like being that person who like came up with the design and be like, oh, we got this character. Nobody likes it. Everyone thinks it's stupid and sucks. But thanks for your input and thanks for creating it.
He got paid.
He got paid, exactly. And George loved it, so it's okay.
Yeah.
George brought him back two other times. Come on.
Exactly.
All right, Taffeta, are you ready for your final question in the geek seat?
Okay.
What is your ultimate geek fantasy?
You know, for the longest time, it was to go out to New York Comic Con and save up a lot of money and just kind of do it right and pretty much do whatever I wanted. But the older I get, the less I want to be around people. So I've actually thought about this a lot, and it's not necessarily a fantasy. I mean, it is a fantasy, but I'm working to it becoming real. But obviously, my geek fantasy would be to meet Kurt Russell, preferably at one of his wine cellars in Colorado. So working on that, and I'll let you know how it goes in about 10 years.
Well, okay.
Hopefully it doesn't take that long.
I hope not. Definitely not.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all a matter of timing. But
he's not one that does a lot of appearances.
Well, Taffeta, guess what? You have made it through the geek seat. Congratulations.
Okay. I'm giving myself a pat on the back. Thank you.
Mr. Mike Gordon, tell the young lady what she's won.
You have won a lifetime subscription to the ESO Network, a value easily worth $40.77.
Thank you.
She's almost impressed with that.
I guess I know we can. Yes, we could put that towards the Kickstarter. Why not, right? Although it devalues the more you get closer to Earth and off the station. So
that's kind of my life is too. So I get that.
It's been great having you join us. For those people, where can they find you online, or if you're going to do any appearances, plug away.
Next month, I will be at Retropalooza San Antonio. I help run the costume and the cosplay stuff out there with those guys. It's an all-retro YouTube convention where it specializes in a lot of video gaming and YouTube specialists on YouTube. There's not even an easier way to say that. They're specialists of YouTube specialization technical stuff. So, yeah, it's Retropalooza. But everyone can find me on the website at thetaffetadarling.com. I'm also on Instagram at thetaffetadarling.com, and then my Facebook page is just Taffeta Darling. I think there's one other person out there that has Taffeta Darling on Facebook, but it's not me. You'll be able to tell.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, we will have show links to all that in our show notes, including the link to the Kickstarter for the comic of the Daring Darling. So good luck with that. Continued success. And thanks again for joining us.
Thank you, guys.
Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in a moment, and we're going to be talking all about MASH.
Hey everyone, Michelle with the Iconic Rock Talk Show Moment, and just in case you missed it, the latest installation in the Hameldrop series is out, and much to the delight of everyone in the universe, particularly Lin-Manuel Miranda and Jimmy Fallon, Weird Al himself has adapted virtually the entire score of the show into, you guessed it, the Hamilton Polka. Hey! It's one of those things that you didn't know you needed, but you need it. Check it out in all its glory, wherever fine music is streamed. Record Store Day is a few weeks away. It's on April 21st this year, but some scheduled titles are already being announced, including 8 Bowie items, which we'll look at later. Bowie was huge last Record Store Day. I think he had the number one selling title, and it looks like they're gunning for that again. But in the meantime, Led Zeppelin celebrating their 50th anniversary. They are doing their first Record Store release. It's a yellow vinyl 7-inch single with previously unreleased mixes of Rock and Roll and Friends. It's said that the Friends mix takes off all the orchestration and gives a, quote, fly-on-the-wall feel of the Led Zeppelin 3 sessions. Robert Plant says that he will be part of the celebration in some way, that it's all up in the air, but he's looking forward to seeing the guys soon and that not a stone will be unturned. He also recently admitted that during Zeppelin days, he used to fake throat problems so he could sneak off and watch his favorite football team, the Wolverhampton Warriors, play, and then he magically got better the next day. Rock and roll, Robert. Musicians doing some great things for kids. Little Steven and the Disciples of Soul will be touring this spring and supporting Steven's Rock and Roll Forever Foundation's Teach Rock program, which brings music curriculums to middle and high schools across the country. So far on this tour, just a handful of stops, Connecticut, New York, and New Jersey for this, but they're saying they will add some more. They have been touring behind the solo album Soulfire that came out last year. And Dolly Parton's Imagination Library donated its 100th millionth book last week. They gave a copy of her latest book, a picture book for kids called Coat of Many Colors, of course based on her song, to the Library of Congress. And Dolly was on hand for the dedication ceremony, and she gave a public interview with an audience to the Librarian of Congress. There is such a person, Carla Hayden, and talked about her own love of reading. Dolly's father was illiterate, and she started the Imagination Library in her home area, Sevier County, Tennessee, in his honor. And it gives a book a month to children from families who can't afford them every month from birth to age 5. In other news, Spice Girl Mel B was a guest on the show The Real, and she let it slip that all 5 Spice Girls will be attending, have been invited to the upcoming royal wedding and performing, so we know what Harry and Meghan want, what they really, really want. And also in Great Britain, Ed Sheeran has petitioned the Suffolk Coastal District Council for permission to build a private chapel on the grounds of his estate called Winnis Hall. Not something you see somebody petition to build every day. According to this, he needs a retreat for contemplation and prayer and the celebration of key life and family milestones, and that his guests and colleagues from around the world have high profiles and associated need for discretion not served by the churches. Plans call for a chapel building that mimics the Saxon round tower churches that were built in the area centuries ago, with a 48-foot tower and 8 pews to seat a congregation of 24. Sheeran got engaged to his girlfriend Cherry Seaborn a few weeks ago, so that might be the first key family milestone celebrated if they let him go ahead and build this. Kind of different. This has been the Iconic Rock Talk Show moment. Check out the blog, iconicrocktalkshow.wordpress.com, and we will see you next time.
Welcome back. And now we are going to Korea, 1950-53 era. Placed in a mobile army surgical hospital, aka MASH. This is the 4077th to be exact. And we've drafted a couple of people to participate in this endeavor with us. First off, returning to the station is the award-winning Bobby Nash. Welcome back, Bobby.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
I wish circumstances were better, but we are at war here, so I do apologize for that. But I think we'll be able to make it through.
War is hell.
War is hell, it is. And, of course, we need a doctor in the house if we're going to have a surgical hospital. And who better than Dr. Scott Vigay to join us?
Hello, everyone. Does that make me chief surgeon?
Howdy, sir. Are you both all prepped up and ready to go?
Oh, all set, all scrubbed and ready.
Awesome.
Okay, well, if he's the chief surgeon, then who's Hot Lips? That's all I need to know.
I'm out.
That's it. Good night. See you, folks.
well, that went south real quick. Okay.
You know, obviously, MASH was a big, huge influential show. It made an impact. It was on for, I believe it was 11 years, from 72 to 83. It was a staple growing up on CBS for me on Monday nights. When I want to talk all about it, but I guess we'll start. I mean, they had the series itself, you know, and obviously anybody can look this up in Wikipedia or whatever. I mean, there was a novel. And then it became a movie, and then it became a TV show. And there's certain threads throughout, but we're going to mainly focus on the TV show. But I want to know exactly how you guys were first introduced to MASH. And we'll start with Scott. Where was your first encounter that you remember with this series?
Oh, okay. Actually, was watching it with my grandfather, who was a doctor, who served in the military and so forth. He didn't serve at MASH, but because it was doctors in a military setting, it was one of the shows that he loved, and he introduced it to me. And I saw one of the early seasons episodes, you know, live. But then I saw the movie really shortly thereafter and got confused why Alan Alda wasn't in it, and everything. But, you know, if you think about it, you know, 1972 to 83, I literally grew up with this show. So, yeah. It was on all the time, and it was something that my grandfather and I shared. The entire family loved it. So it was definitely family time.
Yeah, this is when... it was on at 9, so it was just, you know, I think I grew into it. It wasn't something I was allowed to watch until later, but you kind of knew at some point, oh, I must be getting older because now my parents are letting me watch MASH. You know, it was this sort of like a path to adulthood, right? But you're right. It was a staple for the longest time. It was just on. I mean, I know it wasn't on as long as I was alive, but I couldn't remember a time when it wasn't on. So it just seemed like it was a show kind of like Happy Days, Vernon Shore. Like these were just shows that were on constantly and didn't seem like they were ever going to end.
Right. And in our market, it was on in syndication as well as first run, you know, in some for a brief moment for a little while. And so, there were the new episodes once a week, but if you were on one of the off channels, you could catch a rerun and stuff like that. So it was really cool. I had no idea how long the actual war was until someone pointed out that, you know, that there's no way that 11 seasons would, they went longer than the actual war.
Much longer.
The war lasted like 3 years, I think. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because the way they did it, you know, if you went by, say, every episode was a day or two, it still would have been longer almost than the war.
Well, especially since they had that one episode that was an entire entire year, you know, towards the end when they, when, you know, as they were getting close to wrapping it up. They played with time a little bit. You know, there wasn't really that many historical moments. There were a few, and they would point them out in the end credits or in the announcements at the end when they did that. You know, and I think that's what it was. The show could be so many different things. It was a comedy, and then it became more of a drama. I mean, for me, I think it was instructive as to how you wrote characters and character development, because, you know, everybody who started with that show, they weren't the same in the end. And that goes for the effect of the war and, you know, all that experience. How could you be the same person? And really, Hawkeye, I mean, you could have written him as a one note joke continuously for 11 years, but they didn't do it. And people didn't object that he morphed and changed, you know, that was
he started out very much like a Groucho Marx character. Like, I mean, like even Alan played him at times just like Groucho, you know,
right? With the glasses even.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and just with these constant one liners, he was hitting on the nurses. He was, you know, just saying insane stuff. And then, you know, as we get to know him more, we find out that that's, you know, I don't think in Groucho's career we ever got behind the facade, right? But with this show, you can get behind all of the characters and to go really much deeper. But I don't want to get into the characters just yet. Bobby, what about what was your first experience or initial experiences with MASH?
Oddly enough, I never saw any of them first run. It was not a show my parents watched.
And, not even the finale? Like, that was a big, like, I thought all TVs in America were on that.
I remember hearing about the finale, but if it was on, I don't remember seeing it. Plus, you got to remember, too, I mean, you know, I was born in 71, so for the early years, you know,
right.
I could have seen every one of them.
You are the baby of the bunch here.
But where I found MASH was when I reached middle school age, and I was old, you know, my parents allowed me to come home from school by myself, and I was at home by myself for a few hours. And I remember at the time, I believe it was Channel 2, that's not important, but would play in the afternoons in syndication two episodes of MASH followed by Magnum PI or vice versa. Magnum PI followed by two episodes of MASH. So for 2 hours, I found these two really cool shows that have awesome. Become like personal favorites of mine. And so my first experience with MASH was an incomplete one because they were in syndication. It wasn't until I got the DVDs that I realized, hey, there are scenes I've never seen before.
How cool is that? That's awesome.
So when the DVDs came out, it's probably been 10 years now, but yes, it was cool. It was really cool. I'm watching these episodes that I know so well, and suddenly there's stuff there I've never seen before, which was just, to me, it was like, ooh, it's a new toy, you know? And, so rediscovered it that way. And, it hooked me. I'm a big fan. I still will sometimes, cause you know, it's on in multiple channels every day. There's a lot of channels that do weekend marathons, and sometimes I'll find myself flipping channels and ooh, there's an episode of MASH I like, and next thing I know, 3 hours have passed. So yes, publishers, if you wonder why I miss deadlines, it's MASH's fault. It's one of those shows. It's considering that it's set in a specific period of time. It is a timeless show. Absolutely. And I know that sounds kind of funny, but it is. It doesn't feel dated when you watch it.
Because their struggles are very human, you know.
Yes.
And because it was a very universal, I mean, and because of the time period it was on, many people thought that they were not referring to the Korean War, but the Vietnam War. And that right. just goes to show you that really, you know, war is hell and that people could relate to it.
Well, it's kind of like the science fiction thing. They were able to use comedy and use a war that was over to talk about. So they were able to use the Korean War to talk about the Vietnam War. And I think that worked really well. Because every once in a while we would get these little mentions of something stirring over in Vietnam. And I think the last episode it mentions that troops are going to Vietnam. And I think it's Klinger that goes, "Where's Vietnam?"
Yeah, right.
So it's I just love the fact that they were able to tell those stories. And, you know, it, I don't know, is this the first show that was ever labeled a dramedy?
I think it might be, and it's definitely the recipient of the legacy of the rural purge of 71. You know, I mean, that and All in the Family really set the tone of new drama on television.
And they also did something with this show that you can't get away with today. Continuity is completely ignored in this show. There are characters who get married on the show, three or four seasons later get divorced on the show, but were married before they got to Korea. Or Hawkeye in the early episodes, he writes a letter home to his dad and says, "Say hi to mom and sis for me." Then later, there's no sister. He's an only child. And then later, we find out his mom died when he was a kid. So it just, they changed it for whatever they needed, and the audience just went with it.
Yeah, or the fact that, what is it, Louise is the same name for almost everybody's wife back home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, Henry's wife changed. Yeah, I think her name changed like two or three times. And
right.
So a lot of differences that way. And whereas today everybody's more continuity focused, you know, these were the days where if you missed an episode, you might never see it again.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about that several times. I mean, this was before the VCR. This was before, I mean, there was, you would get maybe one rewatch and then opened up to syndication. And then I think that's when a lot of people were like really paying attention to stuff. But before that, it was just like, yeah, we can get away with it because no one remembers that anyway.
Right.
Mike, what about you? When was your first impressions of MASH?
Probably around 76, 77. My parents watched it, so I started watching it with them. And this was already, by this point, it wasn't the original cast. I didn't start seeing the original cast until syndication, like Bobby. But it was interesting because then, you know, I was already a MASH fanatic by that point. And when it came on syndication, I made sure not to miss it. So I got to see all the different episodes and, you know, tried to see them in order and, you know, tried to figure out all the different things. And then, of course, I watched the movie and totally different and everything.
Yeah,
and
that totally different experience.
It was. But and the great thing about that was, that was the biggest winner for the TV show, is they did not copy the movie.
Right.
They separated themselves fairly soon after the show started. They had a lot of the same characters, and even like the first couple episodes were some of the same storylines from the movie. But then
not to mention the opening credits, all that's from the movie.
Oh, of course.
Or until the helicopter lands.
Exactly. Well, they kept on changing when the helicopter lands, depending on who was on the show at the time.
Yeah.
You know, oh, wait, is this a BJ episode or a Trapper John episode? Is this, you know, that type of thing.
Well, I believe Gary Berghoff is the only actor from the movie in the show, right?
That's correct.
Yes.
Yeah. So for continuity people, that just really drives us crazy.
Well, if you, originally, if you watch the first couple episodes of MASH, they had the same Father McKay also at first.
No, it was a different guy. It was because it was Rene Auberjonois in the movie.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
And in the first couple of episodes, it was Red something.
Yes.
It was George Morgan.
And then
he was replaced by William Christopher.
Right. Yeah.
So it was just interesting to watch. And it was like, for me being a kid, it wasn't more like, oh, I have the, you know, I related to the horrors of war. I learned about it from the TV show. And, you know, I liked Hawkeye because Alan Alda was charming. He was funny. He did Groucho. And he, like you guys said, and you started relating to his character a lot. And, you know, it was neat to see, you know, he was not a one-dimensional character by any means.
No, not by any means.
And yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, the closest thing to a one-dimensional character on that show had to be early on was Frank Burns.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And because even Winchester was not one-dimensional.
No. Yeah,
there was no growth with Frank. Frank was what Frank was.
and even towards the end when they tried to, you know, mend fences and give him something, that's when the actor himself said, look, I think I'm done. There's nothing more I can do with this. You know, it wasn't like... characters that came after that where they really decided, okay, we're not going to just have a Frank replacement. We're not going to do that again. You know, yes, there should be adversarial. It should be at least something different, a different note, but we're going to do it differently. You know, BJ wasn't a Trapper John replacement either. You know,
but he was a lot closer.
Like, yes.
You know, yeah. I mean, they did, you know, there is a shift. And you can feel it like between seasons 4 and 6 from the, you know, the old guard with the new guard, like, you know, you've got Alan Alda, he's the same. You've got Loretta Swit and some other folks, of course, Gary's still there, but yeah, suddenly, you know, McLean Stevenson's gone and in comes Harry Morgan. You know, you've got, you lose, Larry Linville and you get David Ogden Stiers. You lose, oh yeah, what I mentioned before. You lose Wayne Rogers and you get Mike Farrell. So there's this shift with, and it's not, these are not just you know, recurring characters. These are integral to like the interaction between like all the characters, and it becomes. And I think like Mike, I started watching. I was able to watch some of them as they aired on CBS, and the cast that I kind of grew to like and was introduced to first was that Mike Farrell, Harry Morgan, David Ogden Stiers cast. Even when I saw the reruns with Frank and Trapper and all that, to be honest, they don't hit as hard for me. And plus they're more comedy, they're more comedic. Yes. Because there's a shift with series runners too, where the main joke guy kind of leaves in I think season 3, so it becomes actually like by season 4 I think it becomes more Alan Alda's show.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Yes.
And Hawkeye really becomes, it's more less of an ensemble and more of a Hawkeye show through his eyes, and he's like the deepest character there. And but it works. I mean, it works because Alan Alda is such a great actor that he can pull off the comedy and make you laugh one minute and make you like really like uncomfortable the next minute and want to just burst into tears after that. I mean, he's so good.
Yeah. Plus, they surrounded him with people that could play. He could play off of.
Yes.
Well. Yeah. Because you could put Hawkeye with almost anyone in that cast. And it worked.
It does work, and his relationship with each one is slightly different. I mean, think about this. What other long-standing series like that could have such a cast shakeup and be everybody be okay? You know, Stargate tried to do that, but really it kind of faltered the moment they started to really play with that.
Yeah. Cheers went through that.
Yeah.
A lot of long-running shows do. Gunsmoke went through a lot of number changes.
ER.
Because it was on
that.
For like, you know. Yeah. What is it?
ER did
ER,
that.
You're right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
ER changed a lot of.
But the thing is, it was expected because it was a military. It was, you know.
Yeah, you could.
Yeah.
But
the actual like storyline of the show allowed for different personnel to come and go.
But the great thing is they had the balls to kill off a major beloved character.
Yes.
Yeah.
Instead of just like writing him off, he went home to live happily ever after. They killed off Henry Blake, you know?
And not just a beloved character, but I'm thinking when the show started, I believe McLean Stevenson was top billed. I think he was the one that people knew the most because Alan was still starting off. And I think they were all, you know, decent character actors, but I think McLean Stevenson was probably the the star, quote unquote, of the show in the first couple seasons.
Well, both him and Trapper John were the two big actors who had been well known at that point.
Yeah, and if I remember correctly, McLean Stevenson just wasn't enjoying the work. I think
he's in it, like those first few seasons, he's in it a lot. He's in it, like some episodes, he's in more than Hawkeye is.
Mm-hmm. And I remember an interview where he had said he left because he says, I feel like we're just rehashing the same stuff, and I don't think the show's going to go on much longer, so I'm just going to leave. And he kind of shrugs and goes, well, what the hell do I know?
But it was interesting, though, because when McLean Stevenson left, it also then started a little bit of a domino effect because Wayne Rogers left in that offseason also.
Yeah.
Because his contract negotiations failed.
Because the show had to pay the network a fine to let him out of his contract early. Because they didn't want Wayne Rogers to leave.
And I think he was upset because in the books his character is actually the chief surgeon and he's also the thoracic surgeon in the books. So to be given all that stuff to be given to Hawkeye, you know, he saw the writing on the wall. He saw where this was going, and he didn't really want to play just a supporting character. And well, you know, that's his choice as an actor.
And Wayne Rogers was also acting was not his full time thing.
Yeah,
he was a stockbroker. Like I remember, yes, very successful. That's why you didn't see him do a whole lot of acting after that. He had a very successful stockbroker career. And there was one of the MASH specials where they, Where Are They Now kind of shows, that show where they would talk about how they'd y'all cut and everybody'd go hang out or go to their trailers. And Wayne Rogers was going to work. He would go work in his trailer on his stockbroker job until it was time to go back to set.
Oh, that's interesting.
And so, so he was more successful as the stockbroker. And I think between that and going from being the co-star, you know, him and Alan Alda being the stars to Alan being the star, because it really does become Hawkeye's show.
Well, that's why they even did when they done the spinoff with Trapper John MD, they didn't go with Wayne Rogers.
Right. Well, that was a spinoff of the movie.
And for copyright reasons, that they actually went to court over that. Yep. And the court determined that it was a spinoff of the movie, not the television show, because the production of Trapper John MD wasn't paying the people who were running the TV show at the time their proper share if it were a spinoff of the TV show. It was all very weird.
And it's mentioned, like MASH is mentioned for like 2 minutes in the very opening 2 minutes of the first episode, and it's never mentioned.
Because it's not like, oh, here's an appearance by this guy. They never really.
They had after MASH for that.
See, I don't want to talk about that. No, at all. They had
talk shows like Talking Dead after MASH.
We have a limited amount of time.
I didn't know Hardwick was that old.
There's no place for Aftermath and Walter. Sorry. I want to talk about, because amidst all the shakeups, amidst all the male actors, you've got Loretta Swit, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Who comes in? Sally Kellerman played the part in the movie. But Loretta Swit comes in and really makes a huge name for herself as in a character role that could have been, I think, just really detrimental to an actress. I mean, she's playing like the other woman, right? To Frank. And Frank is not a likable guy. So it's the first few seasons, it's kind of hard to like Margaret, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, she wasn't a likable character at all.
Right.
No. But you know what's great is that she becomes a likable one. And, you know, the episode where she and Hawkeye spend a few episodes by themselves, I mean, that is remarkable given all their history, the fact that they were able to actually forge a friendship out of it and out of respect, too. I mean, it's you know, and for her to go from being, you know, this one note, you know, strict military, you know, character to, I wouldn't say necessarily drinking the Kool-Aid of the rest of the camp, but it was definitely, you know, she had goals and desires and a career that she wanted, and it was just, it was interesting because, like I said, the show lasted so long, it was able to outgrow the starting point of it, and my gosh, she held her own for the entire time, because I mean, she literally represented the entire nursing staff. I mean, they had what, maybe three other actresses that were there in the background every once in a while.
Kelly Nakahara is probably the other one with the most, who is Nurse Kelly. Yeah, and she was there every season, and there were a couple of others that were in and out, like Nurse Abel and Nurse Baker, although sometimes they were recast.
Yes.
So like sometimes, you know, you'd get a different Nurse Baker or Nurse Abel, but yeah, there were a few in the background, but you're right though. I think Margaret's role grew once they separated her from Frank.
Right. And it kind of became tragic too. I mean, you know, she finally gets married and actually has, you know, you think, she's got what she wanted, and then it doesn't go well. I mean, that's something you don't expect to see on television either. Yeah. I mean, especially if you talk about the comedies. I mean, for a show that did things like the Tuttle episode or the Adam's Ribs episode, and then turn around and do, you know, talk about her failing marriage. I mean, you know, it's amazing, the whole gambit.
Well, what do you expect with the last name Penobscot?
Go ahead, Bobby.
I was going to say, and to see where they all end up, I'm sure we're going to talk about the finale here in a bit, but, you know, to see where they all end up and to see, like, because Margaret has spent so much time in the early, especially the early seasons, talking about what she wanted, which was a husband, a house, a career, blah, blah, blah. And to find out that she, you know, by the end, she realizes that really all that she's a nurse and that's the career she wants to follow.
Yeah.
And she's quite happy to do that. And so she's grown beyond that, you know, because it was a very 50s thing. You know, if you're a woman, you should be wanting a husband and kids and, you know, and that was kind of what everybody thought she should be wanting. And so everyone was pushing her that way. And she, it takes her a while to get there, but she makes her own path.
I also always appreciated the sort of, I don't want to say professionalism, but there was a real, this show really sort of lets you know that no matter how crazy the characters are, like how much you disagree with them because of your personal beliefs, whether they be, you know, personal, spiritual, political, what have you, but once everybody was in the surgery room, like there was quips going back and forth, but everybody was doing their job and they were dead serious. Like, I mean, like I said, they're quips, but they have a job to do and they're all doing their job. And but you know, outside of the surgery room, all bets were off, but inside that room, it was like, no, this is what we're here for. This is serious business because these boys need us. And it was, there was something just really refreshing about that, seeing how, yeah, these people are so different, but yet they're working together for something greater than themselves.
That was actually where Frank Burns, I think, had his saving grace, because even though he wasn't as good a surgeon as the others, I do remember there would be episodes where you would, like, I remember there's one called OR. It's a season 2 or 3 episode. The entire episode takes place inside surgery, and they're being bombed, and the windows blow out, and all this debris and stuff, and their lights are shattering, and they're trying to cover the patients. And Frank is doing exactly what everybody else is doing. He's diving in, covering the patients, making sure, you know, debris doesn't get in the wounds. And at that moment, I'm like, you know what? You know, yes, Frank is the joke of being the awful surgeon, but there's got to be something good. He's here. He earned his position in this camp for a reason.
And for them, even
Klinger, who for the most part spent all of his time trying to get out of the service, but when it comes down to it, he's still doing his job.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. There's a great line in one where he's sick, and because there's a mix up with the medicine, and they didn't realize that people from with his genetic background were susceptible to the the medicine was making him sick.
He's technically Caucasian, right? And so they're like, "Oh, it doesn't affect Caucasians." And I'm like, "Well, yeah, but he's from the Middle East, and you know."
And Margaret is like just railing on him about, you know, you're not doing your job, and she's like, "Ma'am, I'm really sick." And he's like, "Well, with all the crazy stuff you pull, how can I be sure?" And he's like, "Never on the job."
Yeah.
And it's a point of pride for him that, yes, even though, like, even when he's on guard duty, he's out there in a dress, but by golly, he's
still on guard duty. He's
doing the job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, trust me, I've been to Toledo and there's worse women there than Klinger.
Well, but I think it goes for all of them. I mean, Hawkeye, right? For all the things that he rails about the military or, you know, the fact that he's there. I mean, but he's still there. You know, there's the one episode where he's declared dead by, you know, by some sort of mix-up. And, you know, they actually talk about it like, hey, this might be your way out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but the helicopters are coming and he's the first one to, you know, say, oh, well, I got to scrub up. You know, and I think growing up, that showed a lot about, you know, if you want an illustration of being honorable, there it is, right? Mm-hmm. It's doing the job that is requested of you and looking out for others and stuff like that. And MASH, you know, showed that over and over and over again.
Right, because they were always working under adverse conditions.
Right.
Like there's one where everyone has the flu.
Oh, that was just on, yeah.
and like Hawkeye's the only surgeon left. Right. And even after he gets sick, he can't not operate because there's no one else to do it.
Right, or, even if he's trying to like instruct Father Mulcahy or Radar, right? And it's like, you know, literally he's puppeteering their arms, but you know, what can you do at that point, right?
Well, yeah. But the thing that always got me, truthfully, with it was the marathon sessions of operating, mm-hmm. sometimes up to 36 hours in an operating room. Yeah. And body after body after body just coming through. And they couldn't do delicate surgery. This was meatball surgery that they were doing.
Meatball surgery.
Yeah, get them out the door.
Yeah. And the amazing thing is, for all this, how cool this show is and all that, this is based on a real thing that happened.
Yeah.
These MASH units were real. They were, what, 2 or 3 miles from the actual fighting. You know, these people were as close to the front line as you could be without holding a gun.
And for some of the earlier seasons, I mean, they really did talk to MASH doctors, mm-hmm. and look at journals, look at histories, and try to get inspired for some of the stories. I mean, some of the more technical episodes, you know, when dealing with like the phosphorus burns and a few other things, that was lifted directly from advice from their consultants. And, you know, that's the stuff that my grandfather pointed out, you know, like, that type of stuff that really happened. And, you know, that was the first time anyone figured out this or, you know, that type of a thing. Mm-hmm. So those elements of it, you know, I really liked because they're like, oh, wow, look at that attention to detail. And, you know, and sometimes it's a little extreme, like when they make their own artificial kidney. Right. And all that sort of stuff. But, you know, hey, they have the time to do it. At some point, they kind of forgot that MASH was more mobile when they put in that cement floor and everything. But the cement floor episode was important because it talked about infections. And, you know, and if you think about all the blood and stuff that was on the operating floor, I mean, after a while, it would just be a cesspool of bacteria.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So why not have an episode about that? Yeah.
Well, exactly. But that's the one thing, because a lot of the buildings looked kind of permanent on – and you know, and the thing was, though, those hospitals, especially during Korea, because the front moved, so, you know, a mile south, mile north, you know, and, you know, depending where the front was, that's where they had to move, and they didn't show it all that often. I think maybe once a season we have an evacuation or, you know, something, or bug out. Exactly. And, you know, they got into that, but they should have, you know, I think it should have been a little bit more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And I
think a lot of that's just because of the TV budget.
Oh, of course.
But I do like it. I do like in the movie, we do actually see them move at the end, the finale movie, when they move to a new location, when they're actually right. set up in a new location.
I thought that was also because of the fire, right? So they had to move.
Yes. Yes. They wrote the fire into the script because the real fire like burnt down the entire set.
It's funny too because I don't know when I think of MASH and I think of all of the different episodes, it really does feel like it's a different show, like you said, after season six. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, there is it's still the same characters. And it's kind of fun that every once in a while, even in the later ones, when all of a sudden they'll have something humorous that'll happen. You know, it doesn't happen with Hawkeye much towards the end, but it does happen with like Winchester and Klinger. You know, they became a bit of a comedy duo at some point. I think yeah. I think somebody said, you know, well, hey, Charles wants to get out, so does Klinger. Maybe they'll team up, and stuff like that. And it kind of works, you know. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, everybody turns on Colonel Flagg, you know. So they still found a way to bring the humor back, but it really became a serious thing. I think that's what made the finale so hard to experience, because you didn't, you know, it. It's bad enough for a character to leave the show or a character to die, but to see your hero characters suffer kind of how that was, as a young kid, I don't know if I was ready for that, you know, we'll get there when we get there, but you know, it really left a mark.
Yeah. I want to get there in a minute, but before that, I want to take just a brief minute to talk about throw some out there of our favorite episodes and forgive me, but I'm going to start because I'm hosting. So, to me, the sweet spot of the run of the show is about season 6 and 7. Prior to that, like I said, the first three, Frank is my least favorite character, and I get it. He's supposed to be, but man, like those shows are a little bit tougher for me to watch than the later ones with BJ and Charles and whatnot. But and then the last couple, it seems like they are it becomes more Klinger centric. It seems like to me, like after Gary leaves, it's like Jamie Farr like really steps up, and it's like, whoa, there's a lot of, like you were alluding to, Scott, there's a lot of Klinger episodes.
Yes.
And I like Klinger, but I kind of like him in the, like, you know, every once in a while, but not like focusing like every other episode on him. But my pick for my standout episode is going to be from season 8, and it is Dreams. This episode messed me up. I don't want to say something else, but Michael bleep me. But it really like this episode messes me up. From when I'd watched MASH. It had its serious moments, to be sure. It had its intense moments, some really dramatic moments, but it also had moments that made me laugh uncontrollably. Like, I mean, gut wrench, like gut punch, like on the rolling on the floor laughter. But it never scared me or freaked me out until this episode. Like this episode, there are images in Dreams that I still to this day cannot get out of my head. When I think of MASH, I think of like one of the first images that hits me is Hawkeye in this boat with no arms in the water. Yeah. It just like he's in his rowboat and it's just horrifying. It's just
the sound effect when the arms that are floating in the water scrub against the boat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah.
Margaret's, yeah.
Wedding dress full of like splatter with blood all over it. It's just it's so horrifying. Like this is nightmare fuel. Like especially for me at that age. I was like, man, I don't know if I could, you know, ever watch it. And I think I did take a break after watching this episode until like for a little while, and then the finale aired like the year after, I think, and it's directed and co-written by Alan. I mean, this is this is all Alan, really. And this is how much, at this point, this is how much pull he has on this show, where it's really his show. Mm-hmm. But it's an incredible episode. And yeah, it's not for the light of faint of heart. It's not one of the ones where, you know, it's not one of the ones where they're playing practical jokes on each other, which are great fun. I love those all the time. But this one, man, even the syndication, it's like, oh, I think I'll rather watch something else.
this is also the only episode where, outside of like if they get a movie from home, this is the only episode where we see any of our main characters in America. Because in Klinger's dream, he's in Toledo.
Yeah, and good
so
point.
They're on, yeah. So he's actually on, you can tell they're on the back lot. But yeah. it's one of the only times, outside of the occasional we get a film from home, where they're actually in America.
Well, Bobby, mention one of your favorites.
Okay. I have one that I love from season two, actually. It's just a great, well-written, fun show. There's seriousness, and then there's the goofiness, but it's called Deal Me Out. It's the two doctors show up in camp for a conference. It's the first appearance of Sidney Freeman. He's one of the doctors. And Pat Narita from Happy Days and Friday Killed. Karate Kid comes in as one of the other doctors, and they're there for a poker game. And so while they're in the swamp, all of them are playing poker. The doctors, you know, Henry and the doctors and everybody but Frank, and then Klinger, they're all playing poker. It's amazing. All these high ranking officers near Klinger. And it's just, there's the verbal back and forth as they're playing, which is just amazing. Because, you know, with Sidney being the shrink and Klinger's angling at things, and, you know, he's of course wearing a dress and all that stuff. And, you know, he's like, and they're like, Klinger, you know, you're wearing a dress. There's 12 other guys wearing dresses. It's not going to play. And so then they're playing the next round, and Sidney looks at Klinger and goes, I'm going to beat the pants off you, lady. And it's just all this back and forth. But then there's other stuff happening in the camp that keeps pulling people out of the game and back in the game. So people are going, deal me out, and somebody walks in, deal me in, and it's just great. And there's this bit with John Ritter in there, which is a very serious story where he's suffering from what do they call it? Something fatigue. Anyways, it's the there you go. Yes, and right. And Frank, he's Frank's patient, and Frank's just being Frank, going, no, you're going back to the front, you're going back to the front, and he snaps and takes a gun and holds Frank hostage while Frank's in the shower. And so they have to then to rescue Frank. There's all just all kinds of stuff. That was also the first appearance of Colonel Flagg. So there's a lot of firsts in that, but it's just a well put together episode that it has a great line in it too, where after John Ritter has taken Frank hostage and the gun's gone off and everybody's dove under the table, Colonel Flagg comes up with a gun in his hand and says, I'll take care of this. All I need is one shot. And Trapper looks at him and goes, no, anything you put in him, we got to take out. Yeah. And he's like, all I need is one bullet, one bullet. And Hawkeye goes, fine, one bullet. Don't use the gun. And it's just, but it's just full of great stuff. It's one I could watch over and over again.
Flagg was always the character that kept on giving.
Yes. Don't play stupid with me. You're not that good at it.
Mike, what about you?
Well, for me, I was thinking about that earlier, and I have to think it has to be The Interview from season four.
Excellent.
You know, when they did the newsreel, there was no laugh track, no nothing. And
it was in black and white. And it was
all black and white, because they actually had an actual reporter, what was it, Cleet Roberts, who was an actual reporter for Korea. And it was just awesome. And the interviews that they had to do, you know, it was almost all improv'd, because, you know, you're doing these, you're doing these characters as, you know, you're doing these interviews as these actors, you're talking to people back home, and, you know, literally, it was just, it was awesome.
Yeah, I remember seeing an interview where they said that, yeah, they gave the actor some talking points if they needed them and said, just be in character and answer the question.
It was all ad-libbed. It was just awesome.
Yeah, and for some reason, like, I hit that one a lot. Like, I don't watch MASH a lot, like, in syndication, but whenever I do, it's like that one. And I'm like, really? Like, not like 11 seasons worth of episodes, and I always hit this one? Like, it just seems to be, like, it's a good episode, but it's one I hit a lot. So, but I do like it. I don't turn it off because it's still pretty good.
It was interesting, though, because they did it again in season 7, but they did it as, like, a flashback episode.
Yeah, the clip show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And but it's just for the originality of that for the first time out. It was just awesome.
Scott, what about you?
Oh, well, I've got two because I couldn't decide.
Of course.
Just too many. for the comedy ones, I love the incubator episode.
Yes.
Right? Because it tells you the zaniness of the military and the wackiness of their situation. And it's like the beginnings of their favorite storyline. You know, they have like a couple that they keep going back to, like, you know, Dear Mom and Dad, right, where they do the writer letters at home. But the other one I love is the whole, you know, Klinger needs a 3-day pass. So in order to do that, I've got to do this favor for this person, this favor for this person, this favor for this person, right? And the incubator is kind of like the beginnings of that sort of a thing. So I love that episode. And then the other one is more serious. It's the Christmas episode where BJ is keeping a person alive so that he can declare the death certificate after Christmas. And it's just, it's the dedication of Margaret and BJ and everything like that. And, you know, they're faced with a very futile situation, but it's like the only thing they can do because they know what's going to happen afterward, you know, and it's just, and given the fact that the camp is hosting the orphans and all that other stuff, you know, and all that stuff, it is a very interesting thematic episode. It's the one that, I think of when I think of the more serious ones.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a good one. Yeah.
And of course, you know, we don't have much time now, but I do want to mention the finale, Goodbye, Farewell, and Amen, because it's so, you know, a lot of shows when they get their chance to end it, they misfire. It's a lot of pressure, you know, and a MASH, you know, you're on for 11 years, you got a 2-hour episode, and this is for all the marbles, right? And I think, you know, when I saw it originally when it aired, I was pleased with it, and I think most of the viewership was as well. I think this kind of set the mark. A lot of shows didn't even end. You know, they didn't get finales like back then because it was just like, oh, it's over, you know. So they got a chance to really close and not just end the show, but they ended the war. I mean, they really put a final, like, there's not going to be any more MASH after this, you know, and there won't be, like, despite the fact that there's efforts to do other spinoffs and whatnot. But, I mean, obviously it starts off with Hawkeye being in a mental hospital because of the Dreams episode. No, just kidding.
No. He's there for something really worse.
One of the most heart-wrenching moments on TV I had ever seen at that point.
Oh, yeah.
And what sends him there.
It was so awesome that you had him and Sydney in the mental hospital. Mm-hmm. And I loved Alan as Sydney. He was all the way through the series, and I'm glad they kept his character around because they needed his character.
Oh, yes. Totally.
And it was awesome to see, you know, Hawkeye, and you know, each one of them though went through their own personal tragedy. Look what happened with Winchester and that band he was trying to.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God! And given how music was such an oasis for him, nobody leaves that series untouched. You know, everybody is scarred by their experience, and for me as a viewer, as a young viewer, I kind of was very upset. You know, this isn't how you want this. You want this to be triumphant, but it was. But you know, if they're being true to the war and true to the experience, it couldn't be all roses and smiles. And no. You know, and as a young kid, you don't get that. You know, but that's why you can appreciate it much more as an adult.
Mm-hmm. And obviously, poor Father Mulcahy, I think he gets the most physical, I think, of the abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Hawkeye gets more of a mental, you see the mental toll it takes on him. And yeah, just a lot of good stuff in the episode. And it makes a really good movie in its own right. And that last half hour with all just the goodbyes, to this day, I catch myself with a tear. Because you spent 11 years with these people.
Yeah.
And in some cases, you've spent longer than that because you've watched them in reruns or whatever. So you got to know these people. And yeah, that last half hour, it tugs at the heartstrings.
And the fact that after all this time, everybody's going home, but Klinger's staying. You know?
I do think that has got to be one of the funniest things. And you know what? Absolutely perfect ending for Klinger.
Yes.
That the guy who wanted to leave the most is the one guy not going.
Is not leaving, right?
Irony at its best.
On purpose. And it fits. You don't think, oh, that's just stupid. But it fit. You're like, with him. You're like, of course he's staying. Yeah. It's really a great testament to a great show. And that really changed. Well, I want to say changed everything, but it was so unique, and I don't know that we'll ever see another show like it. I mean, certainly, you know, I mean, it when it first was on the air, when they first were trying to sell it, you know, this is a land where, you know, half hour comedies, that's all the studios knew. It has to be a sitcom, and you can't tell, you know, serious stories. You can't tell, you know, you can't have serious themes in a half hour show. But yet MASH proved that you could. And I think it did, you know, really, we might not see another show like it, but I think a lot of shows, you took what MASH did and made their own like ways through it, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
So any final words on MASH?
I do want to say, Goodbye, Farewell, and Amen, still one of the highest rated episodes of all time. 106 million people watched it live. In those days, that was just an unheard of number. There were people watching the finale who had never seen an episode of MASH.
Yeah, I remember. That's why I was surprised that you didn't, because it was the thing to, like, that was the, everybody did that. I mean, we only had four channels at the time.
Well, like I said, well, you know, I was a kid too, but, you know, and part of it could have been that my parents didn't want me to watch it. So that could have been, you know, because it's about war and I was a little kid. And,
right.
That's true. It's possible.
But, yeah. But I do. The one thing when I did watch it the first time, and as a teenager, like I said, I was a teenager when I saw it the first time, and I saw by the time I saw the finale, the only question I had at the end of it is, why didn't they just ship them all out together? Now, I know for TV purposes, it's more fitting if one goes. But, you know, why couldn't BJ and Hawkeye have flown out in the same helicopter?
Dude, back then, it's one thing that MASH taught us. It's the Army. Nothing makes
sense.
It's
the Army.
Right.
Yeah. It's like that incubator episode he was mentioning a minute ago. It's like the guy's reading off what the incubator does, and he goes, oh, well, that certainly makes sense. You can't have one.
Right.
Yeah, God forbid a hospital has one.
Right, but a frozen custard machine, we can get you that, you know.
Yeah. Yes, just mark out where it says machine gun and write in custard.
Awesome. Well, thanks everyone for joining us to talk about this great series that I'm glad we finally got a chance to do. I think we try to do a little bit of it justice. Of course, I'm sure there's whole podcasts for this show in particular. You could run a long time with this show.
Does that mean there's an Earth Station MASH podcast coming?
Well, you know, I meant to talk to you about that after the show. Yeah. So
I mean, we're at over 200 episodes. You could go a few years.
ES4077, right?
There you go.
Wow, right, that's a great idea.
Thanks a lot.
You know, and, the last time we made a joke like this, we ended up with a Doctor Who podcast.
Yeah, we're not doing that. So, yeah, on that note, but we got to get out of here before we do start another podcast. So we'll be right back with the ESO Network Con.
Welcome to A Geek Girl's Take. I'm your host, Angela, and this week, this geek girl is talking about my favorite Marvel shows that are starting up soon again. Now, I love Marvel TV shows. The Netflix series, the stuff on ABC, and The Runaways on Hulu. So far, none have really let me down. Now, they can run on for a bit, but, you know, so far, I've still really, really enjoyed them. I am super pumped for the second season of Jessica Jones. I am super excited to see what they do with this character, especially after The Defenders. Now, the new season starts on Netflix next week, I believe. I think it's like March 13th or something. And I cannot wait to have 2 days to just binge the entire thing so I can watch it and be mentally prepared because it's Jessica Jones and you kind of have to be at times. So I'm just really, really excited. The next show that I am, like, jumping off the walls excited about for it to start, it doesn't start until June, but I'm still so pumped and I just cannot wait, is Cloak and Dagger. Now, it's going to be playing on Freeform, which used to be ABC Family, but they renamed it because they want to have a better, like, CW feel to the network or something. I don't know. But I am seriously just so excited for this show. Cloak and Dagger is one of my all-time favorite Marvel comic series, and I am seriously pulling out my old back issues of the miniseries so I can enjoy them again and see how the TV show is going to adapt the comic. I don't expect it to be exactly like the comic, but I'm still interested to see how this show is going to be made and how they're going to adapt it and what changes they're going to make from the source material. So I am really, really happy to see these characters getting some love because I love Cloak and Dagger so much. Well, thanks for listening to A Geek Girl's Take. What will I talk about next week? Well, you're going to have to listen to find out.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back. Now it's time for the ESO Network Con Report.
Con! Coming up at the end of March is a show that we are very excited about. It's dear to our hearts. And with us, joining us, is Robert, who puts on the South Carolina Comic Con, SC Comic Con for short. Welcome back to the station, sir.
Oh, man. Thanks for having me on, guys. I always appreciate it.
Absolutely, man. We're getting down to the wire. You must be excited. We'll call it that.
Yeah, right? I mean, yeah, both hairs I have left are standing straight up. I'm doing my best Doc Brown imitation. But we're plugging away. We're still announcing. You know, we just announced guests as recently as last week. So things are still kind of coming together and new guests are getting announced all the time. It's going to be one of the most diverse guest lists we've ever had.
I see that. And there's a lot of events that you guys are doing throughout the weekend too. It seems like it's very like, you're just upping the game. You're putting together more events. I think the one I saw today was something called the Sword Experience with Adrian Paul. What's that about?
Yeah. So Adrian Paul is doing an event there at the convention center. It's technically not us, but I mean, obviously it's sort of related to us. But he's doing this thing where he comes and you can actually go in there. You click the link, you pay him. There's even a level you can get a Boken sword. And then you can go in and actually learn how to do a fight scene from Highlander. It's really crazy.
Wow. That's amazing. Now, is it that includes decapitation, I guess?
Absolutely. I mean, one lucky person gets to be the bad guy.
One lucky person will be the only person left. There can only be one, right?
That's right. Yeah, and they'll refund a couple people if they need to. You know how that works. I mean, if you're ahead, you know, come on.
That's very exciting. And of course, Adrian Paul is just one of the media guests that you've got, which is a pretty extensive list. Want to run down the exciting folks that are coming?
Oh, sure. You want to do media guys first?
Sure. We'll start with media. Why not?
All right. Well, we'll do the classic countdown. So, I mean, you've got Adrian Paul. You've got one of my favorites was just announced. I mean, so James Mathis is coming, and he's actually the voice of Black Panther for the cartoon shows, Marvel Universe Live. It's really cool. You know, right now, you know, obviously the odds of getting Black Panther from the movie is possible, right? But getting the guy who's voiced it in all these great cartoons and video games, it's really kind of cool. And Maggie Gaia, who was Poison Ivy on Gotham. And then, of course, Cary Elwes from Princess Bride is kind of ridiculous. I can't believe we got him. we worked on him for months. And that's been probably one of the biggest responses ever. Yeah. You know, it's funny. He'll say it, too. It doesn't bug him. You know, he knows kind of that's his money line. So he'll sign it or whatever. He doesn't seem to mind.
Very cool. Very cool. And in addition to the media guests, of course, I mean, that's some sexy folks, but of course it's all about the comics, and man, the list that you've got is incredible of the talent that's returning and some of the new folks. What are some of the new artists that you've got coming that are pretty exciting?
Well, we've got some first timers, which is always a fun thing, right? Bernard Chang, who's worked on everything from Wonder Woman and Superman and Nightwing, and one of the early guys at Valiant back in the 90s, right? That's really cool. I think it's really neat to have him. One of the ones that got me really excited is Tom Grummett, you know, artist for Death of Superman and New Teen Titans and Robin. And for me personally, you know, in that period of late 80s, early 90s, you know, Grummett is that style I think of. So getting him was really cool. And we actually had to fly him out of Saskatoon, Canada. So he is making a heck of a trip to get here. So we're really appreciative of that. We've also got John Beatty, who was Mike Zeck's inker on Secret Wars and Punisher, and he even was the inker on Thanos Quest. I mean, that guy helped shape the image of some things that we all kind of hold near and dear as home runs. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And one I'm super excited about, just because I love Hero Initiative, they actually brought Greg Land in. And you know, Greg Land is a super famous artist. He's done a ton of stuff with X-Men and Birds of Prey and Ultimate FF. And I mean, that's not everybody that's a first timer, but Brandon Peterson, I'm forgetting him. And it's just a huge list. I bet there's at least 25 guys that are first timers this year.
Yeah, that's very exciting. And of course, it's always good to see. You haven't had Joe Staton before, have you?
We haven't had Joe Staton. We haven't had Billy Tucci. Those guys are new. Kyle Starks. I mean, who doesn't like Rick and Morty?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, you've got a nice mix of, you know, what's new and cool, but also, you know, giving props to the legendary figures. I've always loved that about this show. I mean, meeting Denny O'Neil last year was a personal highlight for me. And, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing some of these guys like Joe as well this year. And Jim Steranko, right?
Yeah, Jim Steranko is the guy, obviously, you'd think of at that point. And, you know, for me personally, you mentioned Denny O'Neil. That was a big one for me, because as a Shadow fan, that guy was kind of pivotal for me. He wrote the Shadow in the 70s, as well as all the Batman stuff and the Green Lantern stuff with Neil. And I mean, you talk about legendary writers, it's hard to find somebody better than him. That was kind of a bucket list thing for me to bring him in for everybody. And I hate to be selfish about it, but spend a few minutes with him myself. You know, it was really cool. He was just as sweet as he could be.
Well, I think, you know, I mean, you put together conventions in some ways, the way I put together my books, the way that most people put together. It's like, you know, if it's appealing to you, then yeah, it's going to be, you know, appealing to other people as well. I mean, we like to, you know, we're not islands, right?
Right. And the other thing you try to do is, if I can even just see how someone else would like it, you know, I've probably aged out. Here I am pushing 50, right? And I'm an old nerd. But some of the stuff I'll look at and go, even if it's not my thing, I understand why someone else would like it. And there's a lot of stuff like that out there, a lot of the cartoons and TV shows, and we're trying to find some people who work on some of those properties. Those folks that are in their mid-20s, it's like, what do we find that appeals to them? You know, and my employees help me tremendously with that, because the things they're excited about and the things that I know their age group will be excited about. And as you get older, that gets tougher to figure out. You know, you want to give people what they want, but sometimes your perspective is a little skewed. You know, so I try real hard to find all those different things to put in there.
Yeah. And one of the things I want to mention too, I mean, not only are you giving us great guests and a great show overall, but I mean, talk about giving back. You've got, is it four charities that you're working with this year?
There's quite a few. So a couple of things that we did this year, you know, we always do our drink and draw, and yep. It's one of the things that honestly is one of my favorite parts of the con. It's like most people think, on Saturday night, guys get together and they draw, and we, you know, we auction the pieces off and then we donate them. This year, there's actually three charities that we're doing that with. We're doing it with who we always have, which is Team Cul-de-Sac for Parkinson's Research.
Mm-hmm.
And we're doing it with Hero Initiative, who helps all these comic creators that we all know and love when they're in crisis. But we've added Upstate Warrior Solution this year. And the reason we've done that is, you know, we all read these stories about these heroes that we love, and the guys that give us the right to have that freedom to create those stories. You know, we talked about it. We're like, why aren't we helping them? And so we've done some other stuff with Upstate Warrior Solution, and we wanted to do this for them. But that's also why we found out about VetTix. Believe it or not, we found out about them from the hockey team that we deal with, the Greenville Swamp Rabbits. And so we've donated tickets. It's well over $1,000 worth of tickets to VetTix. And then veterans can go in and get in line and get those tickets for free. And VetTix does all the vetting. You know what I mean? Are you a veteran? They have all, you have to register and do all that kind of stuff. And then you're just stuck on will call once they give us the list. And then the guys just come up and get their tickets for free. And they go.
So nice. So, I mean, it's just good stuff. I mean, this is not just a good show. It's a good show with a great heart into it. And I think that's important. And I love that about this show. So,
it's a community, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It is. It is so much. And I think that's forgotten. I think most, you know, it's so, you know, you would, even as an indie creator, it's drilled into you. No, it's not just an art, it's a business, but it's a community as well. And, I think if more people treated it that way, there would be, well, let's not get on that pulpit. But as far as other exciting things that are happening this weekend here, what else you got?
Well, I mean, another charity thing that we're doing is the blood connection will be there.
Oh, cool.
And like we have in the past, if you take that time and donate blood, I mean, they understand it's in the middle of a con that you paid to get into. They actually have a T-shirt that is only available by donating blood. So they'll have a shirt there. The only way to get it is to donate blood. And that's kind of cool. So,
yes,
so absolutely. They're doing that. Last year, it was 200 pints of blood.
Oof.
Were donated by geeks. So that was kind of cool. some geek blood. So a couple other things. We do have a really neat event that we're doing. If you purchase a VIP ticket, you'll actually be able to attend a special event at the Upcountry History Museum on Friday night. And there is an Alex Ross original art exhibit, as I know you're well aware,
here in Greenville. Yes.
And so all the guests are going to be able to go on Friday night for free, but so are all of the people who buy VIP tickets. They're going to be able to attend this on Friday evening for free. The time is on the website. I apologize. It escapes me. Completely my fault, but I've forgotten what time that event's running. I think it's around 7 o'clock, but don't hold me to that. But the biggest thing of that is, you know, you can attend, and if Frank Cho decides he wants to attend, you can, you know, who knows what guests are going to be in there to mingle with and look at the art. And it's just an incredible exhibit. The Upcountry History Museum has done a great job with it. Just, I don't even know how many Alex Ross originals. I think you went, Yeah, not sure what your thoughts on it were, but
I talked about it a couple weeks ago, raved about it, and it's a great exhibit. And seeing Alex's work in person, it's as phenomenal as you think it should be. Like it's just amazing. I strongly admit that it's something that I think everybody who's going to the show should make some time at some point over the weekend to check it out.
It's really cool and it's really worth doing. But those VIP tickets, they also get a couple extra things. They're going to get several SC Comic-Con variant covers. We have one that's been announced for Shadow Man 1 that is by Megan Hetrick. And by the way, the original art for that cover will be in the Drink and Draw auction on Saturday night. We also have a Bloodborne cover that's really cool. They'll get those free. And they'll also, here's the home run, they also get in 30 minutes early both days at the show.
Ooh, very nice.
And that is that's a home run, of course, and a special T-shirt. And we're going to reserve some seats at the panels for them. So it's a pretty cool thing and something we've never done. We're kind of experimenting with the VIP experience thing, trying to figure out how it works and how we think people will respond to it here. So.
Oh, very nice. I mean, it sounds like, I mean, everything is fitting into place. You definitely want to check out the website and everywhere you're on social media now. Look, I mean, like I actually see posts from you all the time. I mean, it's not you personally, right, on Instagram, but like it's there. So that's good stuff.
I will tell you guys, if you're responding to any Facebook stuff, 99% of the time it is my wife. She handles like all of our accounting and social media and all that kind of stuff. And she works her butt off at it. But any feedback is always helpful, man. Like anybody saying, hey, this would be a better idea. We're always open to listening and trying to find a better way to do it.
And you absolutely are so responsive. I mean, not only does Facebook actually tell you like, you know, hey, this group is really responsive, but man, they mean it. Like, I mean, there's, I see all the time when people are posting something, if they have questions or even little critiques or whatever, you guys respond and take all that stuff seriously. So that's really nice too.
Yeah, I mean, it matters to us. I mean, you're always going to have, you know, internet trolls, and you're always going to have people who really just care and they want to know about this thing that we do and that they enjoy. And you just do the best you can to take care of everybody and try to be responsible to them. That's all you can really do, you know?
Absolutely. And you guys do a great job. It's again, it's one of the reasons why, you know, this is one of our favorite shows to do. And I was saying that long before you guys were a sponsor of ours on the ESO network. So thank you again for that. But I'm just, you know, over the moon and excited about this show that's going to be in just now a few weeks. It's March. Is it March 24th and 25th?
March 24th and 25th. So we're like 3 weeks out and
haven't added that, right, that Friday yet.
No, not going to happen anytime soon. Yeah. You're not the only guy to pressure us on that either, by the way. the convention center's pressured us to go bigger, you know, and we just feel like until it is insane not to, we don't want to make it any bigger than it is. We feel like it's already big. It's 125,000 square feet. I mean, that's a big show.
Absolutely.
And it's the biggest, most well-attended show in South Carolina with the most comic guests. I mean, there's nothing of our size, but it's also, I feel like if we expand too many tables, then the artists start having too much competition. The vendors have too much competition. And we're worried that folks, you know, only have so many dollars to spend. And I don't want folks like you to travel or vendors to travel and just there's not enough to go around and everybody's kind of feels like they're grabbing at straws. And we just don't want to create that situation for the vendors and the artists. We kind of have responsibility to two groups of people, you know, the fans and the vendors. And so you're trying to just kind of juggle it and yeah, make sure you have enough stuff for everybody, but not too much so that they can't make decisions or people aren't making enough to make it worth traveling. I mean, we've got some people, even, you know, Bedrock is driving all the way from Houston, Texas to come to our show and set up. And, you know, you want those kind of guys for it to really be worth it. But you feel that way about even the guys that are local in town who are setting up, you know.
Yeah.
All my competitors here in town are setting up. And you want those guys to do well, too. So,
It's a great show. I'm looking forward to it. And if anybody wants to out there wants to find out more about it, more details, go to secomiccon.com. Check out the official site. Check out the website, the Facebook page, the Instagram. They are everywhere, Twitter. So and we hope to see you there at the show. It's going to be a great time. Robert, thank you.
Hey, guys, thanks for having me as always. And folks, if you see me at the show, come say hey.
Well, thanks, Robert. We are looking forward to SC Comic Con. It's a few weeks away. And in the meantime, there's actually some shows. And real quick, I want to talk about a show that both Mike and I went to this past weekend here in Atlanta. It's the Atlanta Science Fiction and Fantasy Expo. I was there on Saturday just kind of checking out the show. It's a free event that was happening in the North DeKalb Mall. It's been put on by our good friend Tony at Challengers Comics in at the North DeKalb Mall itself. And I know, Mike, you were there on Sunday. And it's a nice little show. I mean, both of us were there, I think, 2 or 3 years ago. And I noticed right away that the show's gotten bigger.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely going bigger. And one of the things I loved about it, it is very diverse with the type of authors and writers and artists. It's just, it's great. And you get, you know, some people who are doing shopping because it's in a mall, but you also get people who are coming for the comic shop and checking out what everything has. And there were some, you know, very interesting things you don't get to see over at other shows. It's pretty cool.
Yes. Or maybe you do, but it's just, they're kind of few and far between. But here it was much more centralized. And I know exactly what you're saying. These voices that you don't usually get to hear from in the mainstream, right? I think that there's a lot of talented folks out there, and it's nice that they have this sort of venue. And look, I mean, I don't know about when you were there on Sunday, but when I was there on Saturday, every table had people at it. Every row of the tables were, I mean, people were actively looking around. It wasn't like they were just sitting there, you know, twiddling their thumbs. There were people actually, you know, going there, spending money, checking out the talent, which is always nice to see. I don't know how many people, I mean, it's a free event. So of course that gets people's attention. It's at a mall, but you know, some malls are not really that busy anymore, but this happens to be a mall that has a theater attached to it, you know, so you can check out Black Panther and then go, you know, comic shopping with some real independent creators. It's really cool.
It's definitely worth checking out. And, you know, for a small little con, it has a lot of heart.
Yeah. And I was there. I saw the award-winning Bobby Nash, who is on this show. I saw him there. He had a panel about writing and the business behind it, marketing your work after you've written your book or your great novel, and how to get it out there in front of people. And then also, I actually talked to Dean Motter, who was, I believe, the we're joking about it, the token male on the Women in Comics panel. So that was a lot of fun. Saw a lot of good friends of the station. Robert Jeffries was there, great writer of comics. He's about to blow up, I think. And our good friend Matthew was there. I'm blanking on his last name, but we had him on. He's part of the Myopia podcast, and he did great sales for his book. So that's pretty awesome. And yeah, it's a good show. So it was a good time. It's actually the second convention I've been in 2 weeks. And next week we will be at a convention. The week after that. This is where it starts, man. Convention season is upon us. And here's where you can find us and some other ESO Network folks. Starting this weekend, Toylanta, March 9th through 11th. This is a great show. We've had Martin on to talk about it. Great guests. Larry Hama is going to be there. And it's all about the toys, though. It really is. The vendors specialize in new toys as well as vintage. So if you're looking for that that one toy that you lost as a kid, or you're looking for some sort of misfit toy, you're going to be able to find it at Toylanta, odds are, or talk to someone who knows what you're talking about. We're going to be doing two panels. Both of them are Sunday. The first panel is at noon, and we will be talking about Mike's favorite thing in the world.
We can't mention that on the air, my friend.
Oh, sorry. Mike's second favorite thing.
Thank you.
We're going to be talking about Funko, and specifically the pop figure phenomenon. This is, you know, the last few years, it's been crazy. It's one of those things you thought would die out, but still hasn't. It's still going strong. They're adding new licenses every day. It's amazing that this format of toys has just caught on like it has. So we're going to talk all about that. And then we are also going to be covering, we're going to help moderate a panel on the Masters of the Universe toys. This was, this came out in the 80s. It was a line that just came out of nowhere and surprised everybody and became a huge thing. And it's still a huge thing to this day. So we're going to talk about that. It's going to be a good time. So come on out on Sunday to see our panels and come on out to Toylana. Spend Saturday and Sunday there. You're going to have a great time. So the week after that, March 18th, at the same hotel, which is the Marriott Century Center, where Toylanta is at, will be the one-day Atlanta Comic Convention. It's a one-day show. It's a slightly smaller show than most of the massive Comic-Cons that you're used to, but it still has everything that you need if you like comics. It's got a lot of dealers, a lot of exhibitors with back issues, great deals, quarter bins, as well as half-off trades, $5 trades. So if you're looking for some reading material, you're going to find it here. There's also a lot of independent creators there. So in the hallway, they line up the hall, and they show their wares, and there's some interesting stuff there. A lot of good friends of the station will be there. So Mike and I will be wandering around aimlessly. Well, not quite aimlessly. Mike will be aiming for more pop figures, and I'll be aiming for some comics. So it's going to be a good time. We hope to see you guys there if you're going to be there. Like I said, Mike and I don't have a table. So give us a shout out. Yeah, give us a shout through social media. Send us an email. Say, hey, I'm going to be here. I love you guys. I want to talk to you. Or, hey, I'm going to be there. You know, I don't like what you said about this or that or the other thing, and I'm going to bust your kneecaps. And you know, we'll arrange our schedules to carefully avoid you. The week after that, March 23rd through the 25th is Regeneration Who. That's in Baltimore, Maryland. From the Flopcast, the mayor of Chickentown, Felicity, will be there. I believe she'll be participating in some panels. And the geek girl herself, Angela Pritchett, she'll be there with her ukulele and her cosplay. So say hi to both Felicity and Angela if you get a chance out in Baltimore. That same weekend, as we mentioned, is the SC Comic-Con. It's going to be a great time. We're looking forward to that. The weekend after that is March 30th through April 1st. It's SpyCon here in Atlanta. I will be there. I'll be participating in panels. The exact schedule is not set yet, so keep listening to this space on future episodes. The one of the showrunners of SpyCon is our good friend Anthony Taylor. We will have him on in the next couple weeks to talk more about the details of SpyCon. It's the first ever SpyCon in Atlanta, and it's very exciting. He's got some Bond girls coming. He's got some programming that's going to be outstanding. It's and some props. It's going to be a really good show. If anybody who's been to Monsterama knows that Anthony's love for classic monster cinema is outstanding and is really represented at that show. His love for spy genre books and movies, TV series is going to be apparent here at SpyCon. So I'm looking forward to that as well. And then the following weekend, April 20th through the 22nd, is RavenCon in Williamsburg, Virginia. Angela Pritchett will be attending that show as well. And then speaking of Dr. Geek, since he's on this podcast with us talking about MASH, I do have to mention that on April 29th, as part of the Mission Steam Possible programming, there will be a Dr. Geek Science Fair. And this is in Maitland, Florida. It's a one-day event, April 29th. And you can find out more information about this event through a link on our show notes. You can get tickets at, I think it's called, Brown Paper Tickets. It's a ticketing company. And, this event, like I said, it's in Maitland, Florida. It's part of Sunday Family Fun Days in 2018. So to have some fun on a Sunday with Dr. Geek himself. Then just to wrap it up, the end of May, May 24th through the 27th, that is MomoCon, which is a huge convention here in Atlanta. I will be a guest at that show. Peter and I, the artist of Tiki Zombie, Peter Cutler, and I will be there with our Tiki booth. So come say howdy to us at MomoCon. And that's it for now, but it's exhausting. The next, this is convention season. Every week, it seems like we've got an event to go to. Mike, it's going to be a lot of fun, but it's going to be very tiring.
Oh, yeah. Get your feet walking, my friend. We got a lot of cons to explore.
Yeah, if you've got a Fitbit, man, we're going to put in a lot of miles over the next few weeks. So it's going to be great. I'm looking forward to all of it. So if you've got a convention that I haven't mentioned or a convention that is coming up, please reach out to us because we love talking about conventions.
So that's going to wrap up another episode of the Earth Station One podcast. I want to thank everyone for joining us. Of course, Mr. Mike, we made it through another one.
We did. You know, we made it through the war, man.
We did, and you didn't have to helicopter away.
I didn't have to get in a helicopter. I'm scared of heights, so I'm kind of glad that we didn't do the helicopter thing.
That's okay. You could do the Colonel Potter thing and ride out on the sunset. So anything you had a shout out about, sir?
I do. I want to shout out another good friend of mine is involved with something tiki and something artful that I wanted to point out to everybody. A friend of the station, he's been on before, Robert Jimenez, who provided the cover art to the Tiki Zombie number 3. He has got a new project that he's doing on Kickstarter. It's Tiki Landa. That's his brand. It's sort of his Isle of Tiki, Tiki Landa playing cards via Kickstarter. It's a beautiful, beautifully orchestrated set of playing cards. Comes with all sorts of really cool other prints and buttons and pins and all sort of goodness featuring his artwork, his beautifully painted artwork. Definitely check it out. There are levels where you can, I mean, if you just want to get the playing card deck that's, like I said, beautifully illustrated, $10. That's all it is. That's the start. $10 for the card set, and you're there. Then, you, of course, you can go more than that and get prints and artwork and all this sort of great stuff, too. But it looks really gorgeous. So check it out. We'll have a link in the show notes. If you go to Kickstarter, put in Tiki Landa playing cards or Robert Jimenez, you'll find it no problem. And it's definitely worth checking out.
That is awesome. And of course, our special guest stars, and thank goodness they're not patients of ours this week, Dr. Scott Begay.
We require a lot of patience on this show.
Hi, everyone. It was an honor to be here. Thank you so much.
No problem. Anything you got a shout out about, sir?
Oh, absolutely. I was hanging out with Transmissions from Atlantis, the other ESO podcast, we got to experience the Star Trek Bridge VR game on the Oculus Rift. I don't know if anyone else has had a chance to yet, but it's so cool. It is awesome, and if you're not a fan of the J.J. Abrams-style starship design, that's okay, because they have this 1701 original Trek Bridge Enterprise to be able to fly, and it is fantastic.
That is awesome. It looks amazing. And I'm sure, you know, boldly going where no one's gone before is pretty darn awesome, too.
Yeah. I will have to say, though, that if you're not familiar with the Oculus Rift, it takes a while to figure out how to use the controls, because when you've got the visor down, you don't see your hands, right? So you see only your projected virtual hands. And meanwhile, you're gripping these controls, but your hands look like they're empty. So you got a little bit of a disconnect. And while you figure that, you know, it takes about 10 minutes to learn how to point. Once you figure that out, you're good to go.
That is awesome. That is truly awesome. I'll have to check it out. Mr. Bobby, you've made it once again.
Yes, always great to be back here on the station.
Back to the airlock with you.
Back to the airlock with me. Do I get to ride in the garbage truck or the helicopter?
The helicopter. I won't put you in the garbage truck. That's JD's way.
There you go. Well, see, I love these little excursions that it gives JD a chance to tidy up while I'm gone. So, you know,
to polish your keyboard. Yeah. He doesn't do it for us. Come on.
He tidies up inside the airlock. inside the airlock.
For you.
Just for me.
Yeah. So, bum.
But, yeah.
What do you got a shout out about?
Well, I have a couple of real quick ones. All of this can be found at my website, bobbynash.com. But I am thrilled and honored to announce that the Pulp Factory Awards nominees were released this week. And some books that I was involved with have been nominated. My novel, Snow Drive, was nominated for Best Pulp Novel, which was a huge surprise. And, you know, I'm thrilled, but it was a surprise. I also, the Ruby Files, anthology, which is a, like 1950s, private investigator character that Sean Taylor and I created, is up for a number of awards for volume 2, which came out last year, including, best short stories for the story I wrote, as well as the story Sean Taylor wrote, best pulp cover by, Mark Wheatley, best pulp interior illustrations by Nick Polico. And best anthology for the book as a whole, which was published by Airship 27. Voting is open to the public. It's easier just to send you to my website and click on the link there because it's a tiny URL link that they gave me. But if you go to bobbynash.com and click on the ballot can be found here link, we would appreciate it if you would vote for your favorites. You know, it'd be nice to add another award winning to the title. It's been a while.
Absolutely. And well, congratulations on that. Thank you. Well earned, sir. Well earned. Thank
you. That is awesome, man.
And the other real quick one is also on the website. This week is Read an Ebook Week. So several of my ebooks have been slashed, as well as thousands of other ebooks at Smashwords. And my publisher Moonstone is having a big sale on Domino Lady and Green Hornet books. They've slashed the price quite tremendously. Links and all that's at my website if you're interested in getting some cheap books.
That is awesome. Definitely worth checking out. We will have links, of course, in the show notes.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, my shout out real quick. I want to give a shout out to a TV series As We Speak has just wrapped up. We are talking about Star Wars Rebels has come to a conclusion, my friends. And the adventures of Ezra and the rest of the gang of the Ghost is over. And now on to bigger and better things with other Star Wars. And thank you to the folks at Lucas and Disney for bringing great adventures and carrying on after Clone Wars ended and with animation and stories that were both riveting and fun and leading into the original trilogy. It was just a lot of cool stuff to see. And I know Mike watched Rebels, and I'm just really happy to see, you know, how it's going to end. So let's get off the air so I can go watch some TV.
Absolutely. You're right. Absolutely fantastic show. They've done an amazing job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
In fact, the finale was tonight.
I know. That's what I just said.
Yes.
See, if you were listening, Scott, you would hear that.
No, I'm agreeing with you. You scheduled it during the finale.
Of course I did.
We're crazy like that.
We are. That's why God invented the DVR. You know, of course. So with that being said, we will be back again next week when we are going back to the movies. That's right, folks. Movie season is already starting to creep up. And it's like almost like every other episode now is going to be movies all the way through summer, it seems like. And we are going to be looking at A Wrinkle in Time. And I'm actually really looking forward to that because it's a book I read to William when he was a little kid. And you know, Judy's, it's one of her favorite books. And, you know, it actually has so many different levels. I'm going to be very curious to see how they capture it on screen. And they did a TV version of it a few years ago that wasn't all that great. So I'm going in with, you know, bated breath, and it's going to be a lot of fun to see. So we're going to be doing that next week. Of course, we want to hear from you guys at home. The new email address, of course, is earthstation1@esonetwork.com. You can write there now and leave feedback for us. We would love to hear from you guys. Or, of course, call us at 404-963-9057. Tell us your favorite MASH memories. We definitely want to hear from you guys. All right. You know, we have the new Patreon up, folks. And thank you for everyone who has been definitely subscribing. And we do have material up there now. Thank you to Jason and Rita, who were mentioned earlier, of the Transmissions from Atlantis. They were the first to actually populate up on our Patreon account. And you know what? They put a video and a audio version of the review of Black Panther. But you have to be a subscriber to the Patreon to actually be able to hear it. I think that's pretty darn awesome. And I'm by the time this show goes live, you will also have, ready for this, folk, the Princess Bride panel from Dragon Con that we did will be up. So we are definitely getting stuff up there. And if you subscribe to the Patreon, you will be getting bonus material. And there's going to be more and more coming. I've been talking to some of the other podcasts, and they're readying material to go up there also. So I think that's pretty darn awesome, you know, that we got that. So you can find it real easy. Go to patreon.com/ESO Network. It doesn't get much easier than that. And you could donate $1. You could donate $5. You could donate $10. Each one has its own benefits and such. And you'll be able to read all about it on our Patreon. And if you want to, you could also help support us by going to Amazon. Or you could also go to our Tee Public store, where we have really cool t-shirts. Felicity was on last week, and she was telling me when she was at Gallifrey, she was wearing the new ESO Network t-shirt that has the listing of all the different shows on it. It's pretty cool. And, you know, you can have ESO right on your chest. And, you know, people could say, what is that? And not, you know, saying what's underneath of it, but that is ESO right on your shirt. I think that's pretty darn awesome. So, before, you know, you want, you could go check those things out. Just go to esonetwork.com, and right on the top navigation, you could help support the station that way. It's pretty darn awesome. With that, my name is Mike Faber. We are out of here, and I will see you next time on the Earth Station 1 podcast. All right, I'm helicoptering out of it. Bye. And we're done.
Goodbye.
No, BJ wouldn't say goodbye, damn it.
That's right.
I was speaking for the rocks. It's an audio podcast.
I speak for the rocks.
It's an audio podcast.
You've been listening to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast that explores the many worlds of all things geek. Please write us at esopodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. And if we find what you say interesting, we'll put it up on the air. If you've enjoyed our show, please rate us or leave feedback for us up on iTunes. And while you're there, subscribe to our show or any of the ESO Network podcasts. We can also be found up on Stitcher Radio or wherever fine podcasts are found. ESO is also available up on most social media sites like Facebook, Twitter, and so many more. To learn more about ESO, our website is esopodcast.com. The show is produced by Calico Productions. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you here next time on the Earth Station 1 podcast. Peace.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.